talk to you in the corner.
If the chairperson of the committee is absent or unable to perform the functions of chairperson, the committee must elect another of its members as acting chairperson. An acting chairperson performs the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. With that done, could I ask for nominations for an acting chairperson?
Thank you very much. I nominate Honorable Mashoko to be the chair of the committee.
Any seconder?
I second that.
Any further nominations?
Yes. I think nominate Honorable Mwezi to be the chair of the committee.
Okay, it being the case, we show we have the agenda, all of us. Page 5. On page 4, I think we need to go to just to know that the first term program was not discussed in that meeting. So we need to prepare myself to prepare for this discussion. Page 5. Page 6. And about the last page. 9 has been raised. Can I have somebody move in a second in a minute? And the third section of it.
I won't let the adults the minute as a sort of reflection of what was the structure.
Some I take it that the minute is adopted and vote as seconded. We are then going to be receiving presentation by especially SDA. Is there anything you wanted to recommend changes on the program? Number 4, number 30, number 30.
Thank you, Chair. I've raised on a number of occasions our deep concern with the frequent changes to the program at last minute. I do understand that the committee has a lot of work to get through and that at times this may require us to have emergency sittings or late sittings. But I'd like to ask that when the committee adopts this program today, that we, including the administrative staff, are cognizant that this is the adopted program and that we will not be tolerating last-minute changes and new additions of sittings unless the work of the committee cannot be done in the allocated time period. That's my first comment. My second comment is that this proposed oversight to Liani and Shawnee, you'll note that it states on the program that the 4th to the 8th of November is it's been identified for this oversight trip subject to approval, but then the program continues that week with meetings on both the 5th or the 8th, and then again another week is blocked out for proposed oversight to Liani and Shawnee. So I think that we need to, before we adopt a program, we need to actually get clarity on which of those 2 weeks this oversight trip will take place and whether or not the meetings on the 5th and the 8th will continue or they'll be moved to the 15th, the 11th to the 15th, because as parliamentarians we cannot
in good faith block our 2 full weeks in our diary for a proposed oversight visit that is subject to approval.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My apology for 5 minutes. Chair, I think Member Paul covered me on the 2 proposed dates. But I was going to request that can the meeting note the program and defer it further to yourself, Chair, and acting Chair, with the administration to can look at the program, chart it quite well to avoid unnecessary changes. And we're still having another meeting on the next week, Tuesday. Probably that program will be streamlined and I will be able to have an engagement. Although Member Powell is raising an issue of tolerating unnecessary changes, probably English, because there's no way that the leadership would change program that is unwarranted. So let's note that material conditions will dictate on what we need to do at a particular moment. So, and we'll continue to say it is beyond our control or it's beyond the chair and his team's control, but is that the mandate of the committee? If it inconveniences other people, it will be not intentional. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thanks and good morning. I think I'm covered by the 2 speakers, especially on the proposed oversight with the 2 proposed dates. And secondly, on the first page today's presentation, I think it's not a state agency liaison board, it's HDA. Just to rectify it in page 1. Thanks. Thanks, Chair. Now, I'd like to make an emphasis on the issue of not changing the program. We don't have a choice but to drop a change if there is a need. Let's just be comfortable and note everything that is being changed. Because when you look at these dates, these ones of the oversight, we were cautioned that there might be changes of it. And you can see really the 4th to the 8th, and also the second one, that is the 11th to the 15th. Definitely we have to have a change on those things. Now, maybe you have to be patient with us. See, I figure this is new. But I'm interested in to know, if it goes to that push, we manage to set meetings on Thursdays. I could see that. On Thursdays that are available. Is it a umthetho woman made in amapesi, cut and dry, to have meetings on Friday? I know it's a working day. I don't want a bitch for Mahala on lecture and me that Friday is a working day. But I'm just checking whether it can't be possible. Umthetho woman made in amapesi. Because, you know what problems do we encounter on Fridays? We want to finish the meetings at 1.
No, as a principal matter, maybe let's allow, you know, the differences in your, let me say, in the role that I think it might be my proposal. Member Powell says exactly what you're saying. That she said in the younger voice, it's a voice of younger people that has got a bit of energy and effort. But she said the same thing that you're saying, that let's adopt the program and try to work for the non-changing of the program as hard as we can. That as and when the changes arise, it should be really, really a need, not just a change, because the way you are projecting it is, no, it can be changed by any way. So it can't be correct. She's saying, let's stick to the program. When there is change, there must be really a need to change. It must not be changed just because, I don't feel that change. I come into meeting tomorrow, this month. So I think you are saying the same thing. On the 2 days, the 2 weekends, remember, it's a proposal we are going to make to the whipper. So the whipper might give this. If they don't give the 4th and the 8th, we will be having work in that week. But if they do, we will not. If they give us on that other week, so it means we will not have a work there. So that's what it means. We are not going to have 2 weeks, remember, we are going to have one. If we get this one, the other one falls off. If we don't get this one, the other one falls off. And then the program which was supposed to be in the one is given to you shall then be moved to some 32, to another week. But I think we should just be allowing ourselves and going to we must try to stick to the program as hard as we can. If the changes arise, we'll have to explain. For instance, remember on this day there was nobody died when in actual fact we have adopted that we shall meet on Tuesdays and Fridays. The gender colleagues of why we must stick to those 2 days, not measure and special law, mamba, is that, for instance, we have not been having mamba code with us because we decided to sit on the day that she is sitting. On Thursday is their day, on Wednesday is her day, and she is a member here. So there are those that are serving, not serving only one black committee, that serving others like you are. So your other committee is suffering because the consistency was this one. And we don't know whether we're not meeting on Wednesday, you are coming to go into your committee on Thursday. So it's not patient law, or it is an arrangement of parliament that we shall sit in different days in order to allow those that are not having enough members to can serve in all portfolio committees like the IPM with a conceptual number. So they must go to all the number of them. So I think we take the note, we take the point. And indeed, it is the SDA, not the manager. Can we continue?
But sir,
yes.
Sir, my hand was up. I wanted to say, if this matter now of the court that waits for oversight should first go to Whipari, then Whipari fix tomorrow. So let's agree that on Tuesday we won't have a program left in the proposed program because of these two, you know, items in this program. Because really, I understand some circumstances, but you know, we are parliament. We can't always have proposed things. Because everybody we need is here. You see, it means that our planning, you know, is not proper. You know, but at least next week Tuesday when we meet, we must have finalized this matter because we are expecting tomorrow. That's what I just requested.
Okay. Okay. I see, let's get there, the SDA, the problem is adopted, isn't it?
We follow what you just said.
Yeah.
It's muted.
No, by now, No, I don't know how they want to approach it. You remember the last time they came, all of them, for introduction, and then they left, they came one by one. I don't know how the department organized.
No, the other grounds, I missed them.
Yeah, but she can't go and face him on the ground.
NDA, Shra.
Where are
they? I met them on the floor.
No, you want them here, not on the floor. They are not here. Okay, so let's, yeah, so we should take the upper set.
Outcomes of the Housing Development Agency as well as the Social Housing Regulatory Authority in the past financial year. Chairperson, it is perhaps important to point out upfront what we may have informed the committee before, and that is in both instances, these two institutions faced governance challenges culminating in the minister, in the case of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the minister intervened and asked the board to stand down. That is simply on the basis of the outcome of the legal wrangle that unfolded, where the board sought to suspend the CEO, but the court ruled that was unlawful. The board further pursued the matter and sought to appeal the matter, which the court took a very dim view of the conduct of the board. And therefore, I'm sure members at their leisure, they may be able to look at that judgment. It basically cast a big shadow of doubt over the integrity of the board. In fact, the judgment says, in essence, the board cannot be trusted to ensure good governance in the entity. So the minister was left with no option but to recall the board. However, the performance of the entity members will be presented with just now. Secondly, in respect of the Housing Development Agency, which is perhaps the darling of the sector, the agency went through perhaps extremes of organizational implosion. So it is an entity that, in my view, it's a broken house. Several investigations have been undertaken. The previous board placed the CEO on suspension, investigated the matters. They further placed on suspension several executives. As we speak today, executive managers. As we speak today, several of those executive managers have since been charged and they resigned. We are still in the throes of a disciplinary process involving the chief executive officer. Chairperson, the agency has been subject to administration since December. The administrator was appointed in December but could not carry on because she had at the time commitments abroad. So she left in February, at which point the former minister appointed another administrator, who was then replaced by a board in Accra. Now, Chairperson, we previously took the committee into confidence in that when the minister now looked at the board, she found that the board was inappropriately constituted and therefore she decided to restart the process of appointing the board. As we speak, Mr. Neville Cheney, who is the DDG for Strategy and Planning in the National Department, has been seconded to the agency to be acting as CEO in the interim. We are approaching cabinet to finalize the matter of the board, both in respect of the HDA as well as the SHRA. Chairperson, we stand before you comfortable that the administrative operations of both entities have been stabilized. We are attending to the governance letters as directed by the minister. Chair, I should have started there. The minister, I'm sure, has sent her apology. Minister is abroad. Similarly, the Director General Changana, who seconded to acting water, is in the last time you speak. He may join the meeting in later on. So, Chair, I thought I must gauge the state of governance in the entity so that members look at this performance within that context. As I said, Chair, as a department, in as much as we are extremely concerned, but we are comfortable that the administrative operations have been stabilized. Chair, the two reports that will be presented to the committee, the first one will be presented on the performance outcomes of the Housing Development Agency, as well as that will be presented by Mr. Cheney, who will introduce the team that accompanies him. With your guidance, Chairperson, thereafter the SHRA will present its report led by the CEO, Mr. Rory Gallagher. Chairperson, for your information, and I'm saying information, the establishment of the Housing Development Agency was led between 2008 and 2009 by myself and Mr. Cheney. Hence, Chairperson, we place our confidence because we know from what was the initial intention, the drafting of the legislation, what is expected of the entity. Chair, allow me, and through you, Chairperson, to invite Mr. Cheney to walk through the annual report through the presentation that's been prepared. With your permission, Chairperson.
Please present, John Walker.
Morning, Chair, members. Thank you for acting DDG Shabane. Chair, just with your permission and the members' permission, I'd like to introduce the team that is with me. Sitting next to me in the red is Ms. Betsy.
Why is
What? Because he is young and he's young. Economic transformation. That's why she's wearing red. Simple.
Chair,
what else do you do?
Ms. Petile Magagula, the acting CFO. Next to her is Ms. Daphne Mwasheng, who is the executive head responsible for program planning, design, and project management. And then sitting behind me, I have Mr. Katlego Motsela-Khomo, who is the acting head for communications. And then immediately behind me is Mr. Johan Mini, who is responsible for business intelligence and, Chair, my apologies, Mr. Bosco Koza, who is the regional manager for the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Western Cape. Thank you. Chair members, with your permission. Chair, I think as per the contents, and I know I've got 15 minutes, so I'm going to go through. Chair, it's important just to note that, and we give on page slide of 54, I'm not going to go through all 54 slides, but just to indicate, and it's important for us to understand particularly what the focus areas of the HDA are, and that's to identify, acquire, hold, develop, and release well-located land and buildings, provide project management support and housing development agencies, housing development services. It also ensures that that residential and community developments are sustainable, job creation, a land inventory and information system, and there's a community participation aspect in relation to the work that it does. On slide 4, just to indicate, these are the development support that we've given to stakeholders, and in relation to the stakeholders, it includes municipalities, provinces, and in certain instances, some of the entities or state entities. Chair, just on the last bullet point on that, the HDAs, Chair, I must just get used to not being part of the department. It's important to note, and I think it's in what has transpired between October 2018 up until now, we must not lose sight of some of the work that the HDA has done. So on the last bullet point, you'll see that it says Section 29 mandated projects where the HDA acts as implementing agent, and this is particularly in relation to the N2 gateway and Zanimbula. So all the work that is being carried out as we speak on the N2 gateway, on the N2 coming into Cape Town, the HDA is the project manager, and in relation to that, there's been a substantial amount of delivery. I mean, I can get Bosco, Mr. Koza, to give us the exact detail of what that number is. Also, if you look at the work that we've done in Zanimbula, and in certain instances, the work that we've done in relation to some of the land. Chair, I think it's important just to note, and from slide 5, we just give, and I think it was an important aspect to highlight that 2019 is 10 years of the existence of the HDA. So between 2009 and 2018, there's a substantial amount of work that has been done. And we cover that in the highlights on slides 5, 6, as well as on slide 7. And we're just on slide 7 if we indicate what we are involved in is 8 provinces. We're involved in catalytic projects, the mining towns, and informal settlement upgrading. And we've also, through the HDA, acquired and released for development 31,000 hectares of land, and part of that process is we are undertaking the rezoning of those pieces of land. And then the number of sites and services delivered in that period has been 24,097. That's the last point there that we raised. In relation to the MTSF highlights, and that's on slide 8, the HDA, as I've indicated, has contributed a substantial amount, particularly in relation to the informal settlement upgrading, mining towns, catalytic projects, and those catalytic projects are 48, which covers the entire country, and we're busy moving that up by adding another 3 to that. Chair, then the slides from 9 onwards, we give just some of the performance highlights in relation to the annual report. Chair, at this point, I'm going to just pause to indicate that the HDA, as we sit here now, has got 252 employees. And a large number of them are young, black, female professionals, planners, engineers, quantity surveyors, urban designers, project managers, project administrators. And Chair, it's important to note that whatever has been said, we must always hold perspective that if 10 people or 10 individuals misbehave, we cannot, and I say this reservedly, we must hold perspective that not the entire organization gets held responsible for what is being done, because as we sit here, there's a substantial amount of work that is particularly continuing to be done by those individuals. And a good example would be the N2 Gateway, the Alex Urban Renewal Project, and some of the other projects that continue, the Rapid Land Release in Gauteng as well. Okay, so on slide 9, we just give the program performance highlights, and that's on the macro indicators, what we set out to achieve. And on slide 10, of importance here is the issue that the annual target that we had set ourselves was 10,147 service sites, and the performance for 18-19 was 12,942. And then in relation to the annual target for housing units, we had set ourselves the target at 11,754, and there were 998 housing units delivered. And that encompasses, I think, just important that notwithstanding the difficulties during this financial year, that the organization, through the staff that have been dedicated and responsible, managed to deliver on those targets. Chair, in relation to the balance of the slides from here until probably about slide 40, we give you an indication of what the program highlights. Slide 12 is administration, so that was what we managed to achieve in relation to administration. We then go on to the built environment implementation, and these are all contained in the annual report. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to go to just an indication that in relation to the financials, and which I'll ask Ms. Magagula to go through, and then I'll take the committee through the annual audit, which I think is something I would just like us to focus on and labor. So I don't want to use up the 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chin. Good morning, everybody. I'll go to slide 40, which 39? 39. Slide 39, we have just included the financial performance of the HDA in 2018. If you go to our annual report in this year, we also have included in page 22 the report of the Chief Financial Officer that gives narrative and detail of the performance of the financial performance of the HDA in the year. So the slides are quite concise, but if you want to see the detail of what is being reported in the performance of the organization, it is contained in page 22, from page 22 to page 25 of our annual report. The HDA is reporting a deficit of 12 million. It is important to also state that if you were there last year, the prior year was not 21 million. So in this year, we've restated prior results that shows a surplus of 21 million, when in last year it was showing 1 million. This is because we had to reallocate and restate the revenue that we had reported last year that was understated, and we upped it to 21 million. So what is happening is that although we have reported a deficit of 12 million, we had sufficient reserves in our accumulated surplus to be able to fund the operations of the HDA in this year. We go to slide 40. Slide 40 is now the comparison of the budget information against the actual results of the entity. It also is contained in note 40, where we talk about the reasons why we have not necessarily spent what we're supposed to spend. But in general, 6% of expenditure. We spent 9% of revenue received over and above what we just below what we had budgeted for, which in is considered a norm and not outside of the usual spending that the organization spends. So the HDA is reporting conditional grants that we received. When you look at the conditional grant income in the third column, which is funds that we received from regions, we show 35% budget under receipts, which means that we did not receive the amount of money that we needed to receive. The funders continued to fund us sufficiently with the grants that we needed to be funded with, and the entity really did well in managing its finances and using up the funds that we're supposed to use in funding the operations. Statement of financial position, that is financial position, it shows that although we were strained in the cash flow position, but the entity has sufficient funds and sufficient capital to drive the operations of the entity. The audit report that is supporting this is also contained in this report. I think we can report that in this year we have received a qualified opinion, not on the financial statement itself, but on the supply chain related processes, where we in our audit opinion, the auditor, our auditor said we have not quite in note 40, in note they said they were not comfortable with what with the completeness of irregular expenditures that we had reported. So that was the only issue of the regression in the audit opinion. And also they have raised a reportable irregularity that they said they were going to report to the audit the other, because of, you know, the issue that Mr. Chavan has mentioned right now regarding the executives and that face disciplinary that happened during the year. So this is what we are reporting on in the financial.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to, sorry, with your permission and the members, just to take the slide 38. Slide 38 gives the agency performance in relation to what its annual target. So you'll see that in relation to the annual target, the agency was only able to meet 57% of its targets. 43% of the targets were not able to be achieved. And that's particularly in relation to what it set out to do. So it only set out to do that, but 57%. Chair, then I'll just skip. So the audit opinion, just to indicate, is a qualified audit opinion. This is the first time in 9 years that it has achieved this. In all other years, it either achieved a unqualified, with no matters of emphasis, or, as we know it, clean audit. And in the previous year, it was an unqualified with matters of emphasis. So that just the important thing is it represents a regression. On slide 44, we give you what the summary per audit finding is, and Chair, just to indicate members, there's 93 audit findings, which is a substantial amount of findings. There's 31 that are supply chain related, there's 20 that's related to finance, 18 in relation to 18 in relation to IT governance, 5 and human resources, 1. What we have been able to do, Chair, just to indicate over the last month, is that the key audit findings, and I think this is important, and what we want to be able to do is to disclose to the portfolio this is the state of affairs. So there's irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure registers are not maintained during the year. Internal controls related to SCM are not in line with required compliance. There were internal control deficiencies and oversight related to annual financial statements performance. And that was compliance with or non-compliance with laws and regulations. It highlighted non-adherence to delegations of authority as well as non-compliance with treasury regulations. And then the corresponding figures for 2018, as stated by the acting CFO, had to be restated as a result of financial errors in the previous year. The audit of organizational performance measurement indicators highlighted a number of findings. And then there were also findings in relation to procurement and contract management. And these are highlighted on page 87. And then just important to note that the auditors identified two reportable irregularities related to contract payment and board committee administration. And just to indicate, we could not find any records of board resolutions, decisions, SCM non-compliance, irregular expenditure was 106 million. So there was substantial amount of the full details, and I'd urge members to look at is on page 83 to 89 of the annual report. Chair, so what have we done? And there's an audit action plan that we have taken, and this will, based on the current roles, be submitted to the department. And we've made copies for the portfolio, so you can measure us against this in quarterly performance areas when we report. I've just highlighted, Chair, we've highlighted a couple of these in relation to what the important ones are. Revenue was not recognized as accurate. So there were deficiencies in the way that there were certain matters related to the competencies of the financial management and staffing. And this was a result of a number of suspensions that took place. And there was a substantial amount of impact or dislocation or disruption to the work of the agency in relation to that. We give the issue around the completeness of irregular expenditure, and in the document, Chair, it highlights some of the SCM findings. So, for example, in one instance, there was a supplier that found that was placed on the roster that was originally disqualified and did not meet the requirements. There was an amount of 14 million paid. There was issues around change of scope for quotations. There were relevant compliance documents required in terms of SCM that was not undertaken. And these are highlighted on page 48, audit action plan item number 51. You'll just see that it says lack of evidence of approval and infrequent update of policies of financial and operating policies, governance, inadequate delegation of authority. I think the important thing here to note is that the board delegated almost 95% of its responsibilities and tasks to the CEO. And you had an instance in the HDA where all the powers and functions and responsibility was concentrated in the CFO, in the CEO, which represents an unhealthy situation. Audit action plan number 53, no proper maintenance of minutes. Internal audit existence, functioning and composition didn't exist. There was deficiency in the risk management, and then also the risk audit and risk committee. So, Chair, just in relation to the governance and risk mitigation plan, we've indicated that we're conducting a strategic risk assessment for 1920 because we don't have that at the moment. There's also a process to identify the operational risks. An incident register has been put in place, as well as identifying new and emerging risks. That's on the risk stuff. On the leadership, the accounting officer did not adequately perform oversight responsibility over financial reporting, resulting in material misstatements being identified during the audit. And just an example of what the breakdowns occurred. The agency did not have a proper filing system to maintain information that supported the procurement and contract management. This included information related to quotations. Policies, ICT governance, and ICT steercom references were not approved. Management oversight of the audit action plan didn't occur, and we've put that in place. And then the important thing at the moment that we're undertaking, which hopefully by the end of this month, that's October, we'll have in place, is a review of all the SEM policies, procedures, and processes. Chair, just in relation to the immediate actions in relation to the governance, as indicated by Mr. Leshabaya, the board is being put in place. We submitted to Minister, or in process of submitting to Minister, a terms of reference for the appointment of a CFO and a company secretary, which we don't currently have. And then there's also finalization of all the current investigations, inquiries, and disciplinaries. Just to confirm, Chair, that in the disciplinaries instituted, there have been 3 resignations as a result of the institution. There's 3 senior executives, including the CEO, whose disciplinaries are continuing, and we hopefully will be able to complete that by the 15th of November. Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if there's anything from colleagues. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, this is the annual report of the Housing Development Agency. It's presented to the committee.
Perhaps the chair may guide whether we take a short presentation and then the committee deliberates on both. But we remain guided.
No, I don't think that the thing that any of the possible committees to present we can engage one after the other. In the middle of the committee, or the White House to call that committee to plan this. Remember, what must we do? We must engage this question for the support or one celebrity to come. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for the presentation. I just want to go to page 10 and 11.
where you've not reached targets, and I never heard the reasons for not reaching that target, right at the bottom, 5,690 housing units, and 11,754 was your target, but you only reached 7,998. So if you can just elaborate on that, page 11. Your youth and also your disability, you've not reached target on that. It's way below your target, 10%, and you only reached 2.5 for youth, 5%, and you only reached 1.25. If you can please give me some indication what plans you have put in place to ensure that we reach targets in the next one, next quarter. Page 17, you've also got target of 2,000 hectares, and you've achieved about that. You've exceeded the target. My question is, where are these, what's the mindset of HDA with regards to the spatial injustice, with regards to communities being settled way out of town and having to spend a lot of money traveling to workplace? So where are you at as an agency? And then page 47, I see you have explained that there is some disciplinary action to those, but the 14 million, you said that the company never met all the requirements of the 14 million that has been paid out to them. What measures was put in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again, and what happened to the company and the money that was paid out to them? Are they still doing the contract, or was the contract stopped? What contractual agreements was put in place? Thank you.
There was a shortfall of 3,756. I just want to find out what was the reason for that. And then I also would like to find out what is the progress of the cases that is open, because I want to see, because I don't want to have a situation where this entity just come and report this is the cases, but I also would like to see that this entity come and report, say to us, this was the outcome of the cases that was opened in this regard. We can clearly see that within this entity there's a lot of challenges. And Chair, we need to have a close eye on this entity, because this entity are really in the mess. Thank you.
How will you give your close eye on?
Can I ask you that question? Thank you, Chair. On program 4, my question is related on program 4. What is the main reason for the failure to establish the PSC in the Northern Cape? And then another one is based on program 5. Why did the entity not have adequate systems for identifying and recording all irregular expenditure? And also, I would like you to explain why you did not disclose the irregular expenditure of 106 million to the auditor. And then the last one, I have phrased it in this manner. The AG found that the entity did not have adequate systems for identifying and recording all irregular expenditure, and that there was no satisfactory alternative procedure. How are you planning to deal with these findings?
Thank you.
Thank you.
What can I say now? I haven't even given give it to you. Give it to her.
Give it to me.
Okay.
No, my question is, the agency undertakes work in provinces and metros in Eastern Cape and Ekurhuleni. However, the metros and province not meeting its obligations by paying the agency. This forces the agency to use own operational funding to undertake work. What support is HDA receiving from National Department to address strengthening of intergovernmental relations? Thank you.
Toilet, Chairperson, and also great to see our Singwa Shane after some years. And no chair would want to comment. Chairperson, you know the ills of society doesn't come because people gave birth, of those of young people. The youths are because of seniors that are unable to guide the young ones. Now, could I sum it up by saying the absence of the department to do oversight on this entity is the reason why this entity is reporting like this. Because if we can approach it from left to right, if there's no governance structure in any institution, we always say go out there and look at all the good performing schools. It is because their SGBs are doing well. Now, here the same. All these wrongdoings, they happened because the department was upset to do their work over the entity. Of course, I know it could reflect to the committee to say, where was the committee as well? It will not be the department alone. It will also say, where was the committee? Probably, Chair, as a committee, we need to maybe at our different discussions in the absence of the department have a concrete way of saying beyond the quarterly reports that are submitted by the department, what are we going to do to monitor the HDA to see that all those risks that are identified, they are realized in terms of implementation. If you go to just maybe, because I'm too general, maybe just for an excitement of a specific question, can you go to slide 40? Slide 40, you are saying deficit of 12.7 million. In the prior year, you had 21 million above or a surplus, although you mentioned other surpluses. Maybe if you could explain that. I think the regular or the what created or made you to be qualified, you have explained. And you have also explained the action plan for the future. Also, Chair, you are saying you have performed 57% and you couldn't perform 43%. This is huge, this is half. But in terms of financial expenditure, it's like you said 96, did I hear correctly? You said something 90 something. Something is wrong there, teacher. What were the targets? Either the planning was mismatched. So, that one itself, to me, is not a report. It's missing a very important detail of those risk leadership that you need to identify from the targets versus financials, which talks to planning. He can still, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Chair. Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. In program one, which is administration, you have achieved 6 targets out of 11. And the presentation indicates that you have overspent your budget by 25%. So my question is, how did you fund this over expenditure in program one? And what was the reason actually for overspending? And secondly, you spoke of one of your catalytic projects, your N2 gateway and your Alexander Township renewal. I think maybe just in brief, just to explain what is it that you have done in Alexander Township renewal. N2 gateway, we can see progress, all of us, but in Alexander, I'm not quite sure what is it that you have done as HTA. And the last question is on slide 11, just to augment what Honorable Augustus has said. In terms of the annual targets, in terms of the women, the set aside target for women enterprise, isn't it that the department has agreed on a 30%? Because HGA is saying that annual target is 20%. So I'm trying to check that, because I think in the previous presentation, the last presentation, you said it's 30% for women, 10% for youth, and 10% for people with disability. But in terms of the HTA presentation, it's something else, and especially in the disability and women, which they say it's 5 and 20. Thanks, Shay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Last week, Chair, we got a presentation from the department, which was inclusive of entities, and other public entities. And we clapped hands, we said, Viva Housing. We said, Viva Housing. And we still maintain that the department is performing. HDA is an extension with a delegated power functions by the department. And I would imagine we are Utakaboy. Do you know Utakaboy, Jack? It's a game of faith. Yeah. The preamble by the acting DG, Mr. Joseph, was very worrying. And it is more worrying, the presentation that you are getting. Generally, Chair, without getting to the presentation as it is, but when you get in the operations and the challenges, HDA lacks very clear financial system. I raise this because you have an accounting officer of the department that could be charged things of this nature have happened in the department. Systems of HDN are not tight, I don't want to say they are not there, as we listen. And also the leadership which should guide and address the issues of governance is very weak, highly challenged. The presentation says one supports stakeholders. There is a very important principle, even at home, the trust and building confidence. How are the stakeholders, do they know about these problems? How are they now, with all these challenges that you are really presenting to us, with a huge number of span of control of employees that you have? The number of cars were up or two. Because down there, at the ground level, they don't want you to understand all these issues that you're talking about. But what they would be able to see is that there's no service delivery that is happening in the whole process. As I sit here, Chair, I think there are provinces that are up in arms with the department about the powers that have been taken from them to be given to HDA. They want their powers back there. I'm raising this, it is not because of all of these challenges. I'm worried about, Chair, the chop and change. Which also comes from court of HDA. In my view, HDA needs a very strong organizational review, a very clear turnaround, just that we cannot say Magadapum Lebutin, but I'm worried if perhaps will be able to do that and make HDA to perform well in the process. Uli Temba Paisan, Yobanguye, who should make things happen. And as it is now, was an organization that has got very weak systems in government. It's a challenge. You worried about the DG of the department, Uba. In range of society, how is he going to address this particular issue? Because Guye Obegwe and Togo to be taken to court and pay all other issues that are happening. I want to raise the chair last week that at another level, at municipalities and provinces, they are not going through that process of format. It is an effort to get. And all the those that have got an interest and they are given freely. Now the issue now is what type of government are we portraying if such happens? I still want to hear the department either. I do see the audit actions, the recovery plan is presented. I think they are fine. But each department, I still want to know, APDG, Mr. Shabani Ukuti, do you believe you will be able to address the challenges that HDA is confronted? So you can nobody beggar chair as the acting DG with all these problems. I just made this general assessment as the presentation was continuing, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I like the previous presentation when I was here. I just want to ask one question. The internal audit. In the midst of all the investigating, then I can see that the plan in place. But what is
just a moment that I want to move to the that we all understand. our question to be of present time when we speak of past time, and I understand that you please understand it as answer us with a guidance, because I realize that most of our questions are present time when you are given, you are giving us a dead sector report and it might sound a little bit unguided in the present. It concerns which we really need to try to explain that even if it is a sector matter or as an after effect matter. Don't oversimplify that after effect matter of the surrounding scenario. The assumption I make is that the bracket in accounting means deficit and an unbracketed means surplus. And you're saying in your beginning that in 2018 they had a surplus of 21 million. But in the opening by the DG that your board was dismissed, your CEO was supposed to be dismissed. There was just a lawlessness to me.
Yeah.
And you still have a surplus of 21 million. It can't be saying you are calling a surplus when you're paying to use it, then you call it surplus. It's not surplus if you're paying to use it. Find a way of saying what you're saying, but you must understand the velocity of that money. Whether it is because of good work, or it's because of having failed to do work and suffered. In natural fact, it's negative. But also, Dr. Chairman, I don't understand how did when you have got such problems that you're raising, reporting, an alpha type audit in 2018. Just explain that to us. But I think at some point, let's get to know who was this, who are those boards, who were those boards. Because the possibility, honestly, in listening to the issue that these people, I do know that there is this thing called cadre deployment, which people are crying about. It's not cadre deployment, it's like, but cadres are cadres. So if you are unable to do well, you can't be a cadre. A cadre must be able to do well. Now these people that have just been put, they can't keep minutes, they can't keep records, they can't account for a cent, but they eat money. And you are, then you renominate them. The possibility that they might be serving in other entities today. Well, we don't know that. So I know I won't have them here. Sometimes we must be told who were these board members. The CEO. I mean, if you say the findings even declared this board untrustworthy, it is the findings. And we don't know them. We might appoint them because part of the thing they might write in the CV when they apply to the appointment that they want to have the HDA. And without HDA is the one of our entities who might be prevalent. When in actual fact, they have been found to be untrustworthy. Where, who are those? We need to know that their names and the CEOs, who must know them, who must be, when we see them, what they are afraid of talking to them, the language of business. Because they are not that way. So I'm very worried that, I'm very aware that you mentioned them, the names, but there's a community must know. Remember, Tina, we are lucky, the Shaman. You are stuck with us for 5 years. We are not being shuffled by the president. We are appointed here by our members, our party, with you. The minister can't be shuffled. Maybe that's why the minister of the Nile, Magaba Kosha, Mam Kosha, and myself, Mawala Kosha, Tina Sukosha, we are party members here. So if you give us information and good information, you can be rest assured you are going to get the art of people that will are honest, just because they have a five-year money to deal with. They will not be reshuffled. And then we will reshuffle ourselves by resigning. So help us to, I mean, honestly speaking, if you are saying the board of association could not show you minutes of their meeting, how do they pay themselves? Because you pay yourself by having attended a meeting and because attended by showing an attendance register and the resolution taken 10 minutes, therefore you have done your work, you get paid. How were they paid if they can't show that? And how were they working if they can't, they don't have records of what they are doing? So, and I know it, that's the reason you have brought in change later in the scheme of things. I understand that. But as I'm saying, this issue of the SDA, and I know, and the question was that most of you went with me and everything at some point. And you know these things. So the history which is being said by members is the history you know. And you have been in the human settlement arena the rest of your life. So you cannot be saying this thing came from heaven. Who was busy with such as someone else? This you know. And honestly speaking, then what Seke is raising, the department should be in a way have taken responsibility. What's the next plan? And if there's a plan of how one to do it, move on, let's get it and see whether it's going to help us. But honestly speaking, this is your entity. And this issue of a CEO that takes the board to do, the board is employed by us. If the board is not doing our work, we must change it. Why do we need to do it? If we allow to give it to go to court. It shouldn't be. I mean, we're going to do our work if you don't want to remove you again. And I think it should be very simple as that. Yeah, you realize that you must ask questions. Just a comment that the new board on LCL led by the CEO now, Mr. Shane. There is no, and honestly speaking, even in your plan, Herman's plans are not strong. The one to beat. The plan is just a handkerchief swiping of tea, of sweat on your face. I think it's very hard to convince you that you can't get in the position of business. And you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members, for
just
the...
Just one important thing I'm speaking in favor. Their legal fees and the any questions include the cost of legal fees. Sorry.
You
Thank you, Chairperson. The balance of the questions Mr. Cheney and the team will attend to. But Chairperson, it's perhaps very important to state it before yourselves that what has happened at the HTA was not only disastrous, it was very painful for most practitioners in the sector. The act that was passed by this parliament to establish the HTA was quite visionary, but very progressive. And therefore, when the mishaps occurred in the HTA, it marked a clear departure from what was envisaged in the Act. And therefore, Chairperson, will this report arise to account for what happened? Yes, Chairperson, we're not proud, but let me state it up front again that we must commend the erstwhile board, and I'm saying erstwhile, the one whose tenure expired in 2018 November. That board, when it became aware of the mishaps and the maladministration and all the issues, it acted decisively. It is that board that placed on suspension the CEO and those four or five executives. It is that board that commissioned these investigations. Now, that board chair, in my view, detected these misdemeanors and acted on them. And that's what you expect a board, a governing board, to do. They did what they needed to do. One, the investigation that they commissioned unearthed a whole host of issues, which, by the way, have to be processed in accordance with the law. If it's a labor relation matter, there's a procedure prescribed in law. If it is a criminal activity that is suspected, again, there's the Criminal Procedures Act that dictates how those things get dealt with. Now, Chairperson, perhaps the unfortunate part is that that board's tenure came to an end immediately after they took those actions. It was then left to the minister to then determine how the matter goes forward. The only provision available for the minister to intervene in terms of the law is for the minister to appoint an administrator. The minister is not empowered by law to get involved in the administration of the entity. So the minister appointed the administrator in December 2018. The administrator carried forward all of those steps that the board had initiated. From one administrator to the next, that was the issue. Chair, we stand here very comfortable. We have arrested the slide. I know that we look back and we say, whoa, that damage happened. Where were we? We were there observing these things, and that is why we were comfortable with the board's actions, that indeed the board is taking the right steps to address the issues. Remember, Chairperson, it's important, on the one hand, the department provides oversight, but the Act provides that the board is responsible for governing the entity. That's the law. So our actions as a department are not limited, but they are enabled by what the Act provides. And by the way, Chairperson, let's be fair. These misdemeanors, we can only discover them after the fact. If my daughter comes back and tells me, ah, Papa, you know, I'm pregnant, then she's still in school. It's after the fact. I can investigate who, where, when, but it's after the fact. So, Chairperson, the reality is that these maladministrative actions, we could only see them after the fact. Important question is, Where was the audit, internal audit? That's a very important question, and I think, Chairperson, that's a very pointed question about the systems, the governance state status, and so forth. So I'm very comfortable with that. But also, Chair, it does not go to say that we did nothing. Mr. Cheney and the executive from the SDA can confirm. We even instituted a joint programs management committee between ourselves and the department and the agency and other agencies. Why? Because we are interested in the business. And therefore we are oversighting not only the institutional health but the performance, the ongoing program performance. But for purpose of the SDA chair, members should be comfortable that the SDA can never act alone. The Act does not provide it with, it's not an authority, it's an agency. It operates in an intergovernmental space. Therefore, if you look at all these programs, they are structured around an intergovernmental implementation protocol that ensures that the department, the province, the municipality are working in sync. That leads me to the question about what is then the attitude of stakeholders. We've taken all the provinces, all the metros, all those municipalities affected into confidence to say, this is what we are dealing with in the agency. Yes, there were concerns. You can imagine if you are an HOD, you've signed this contract with the HDA, and all these things are happening, what are you supposed to do? So we've had to then be able to stabilize and arrest the erosion of confidence. Beautiful thing about the agency, many of the provincial managers will tell you, but all of this traffic is happening there at head office. Here on the ground, we are doing what we are here to do every day. And you can literally see that. All of those actions there, findings, audit, you'll find them in head office generally. Not necessarily on the ground, because out in the regions, they are merely executed what is contracted in head office. Procurement happens at head office, they merely implement. So the machinery itself has been working, saying that head office had its own problems. Lastly, Chairperson, the turnaround of the agency is not something that is coming. It is here. Minister Sisulu has intervened decisively, put, I believe, Mr. Cheney, the committee is familiar with him, highly regarded in the sector as well, to arrest the administration decline. The mood of the staff is quite improved. We are very happy with the green shoots, what I call the green shoots, because the signs are there that now we are turning the corner. The minister is also attending to the questions of appointing the board, and there's a procedure there in the Act. Minister will consult with cabinet. When that matter is finalized, the board will be appointed. At the moment, the HDA does not have a governing board. The acting CEO has a direct line to the department, to the minister. So it's an interim arrangement. I believe members will appreciate when you are coming out of a burning house, you extinguish the fire, save lives and so forth, but also attend to the immediate operational requirements. We are very comfortable, Chair. That turnaround is happening as we speak. Chair, the question about the Alex. Remember, whenever the department is required to respond to a development need, we take this agency, because if you look at the Act, it prescribes that its job, and we attach it to these priorities that we frame, we agree with the parties, the province, the municipality. In the case of Alex, we have created an intergovernmental steering committee and a program management office that will help both the city and the province to address the development needs of Alex. We are very satisfied, Chair, that in the same way that we've done in the N2 gateways and Mvula, many other projects, no one sphere of government can resolve the question of Alex. It requires all the parties. There's home affairs issues, safety, security issues, economic development issues. So it requires all of government to respond. And therefore the agency fulfills the obligations of the department in that regard. So Chairperson, I think the other matters the colleagues will deal with, I thought I might just address and those concerns, but also Chair, to confirm that as we sit here, there is nothing that keeps this minister awake more than the state of governance of entities. Because if the governance is weak, many other things go wrong. That is why, Chairperson, this process, the minister is really going the full stretch to ensure that the governance, the restoration of governance in the agency, Chairperson, is concrete. The balance of the questions, as I said, the colleagues will deal with. Oh, last part, Chairperson. In my view, and I'm sure the members would appreciate that, it is perhaps key that all that the agency receives from the department is an operational grant, pay salaries, rent offices, and so on, the staff, and all of those issues. But where the agency wins confidence is when the provinces and the municipalities see the value earned. And today's Chairperson, in as much as that confidence has been eroded, it is intact because the agency, as I said, operates in an intergovernmental frame. If the agency is weak, the municipalities, the province, and national are available. If the province is weak, because there are provinces that have been weak, the agency has been a star performer. In some cases, municipality X is weak, the agency fulfills a very strategic role in supporting the capabilities in that local space. So that intergovernmental system, Chairperson, marshals the capacities not only of the agency but of all of us to make sure that we can work towards the desired perspective and outcome. So I just thought the members wouldn't see the HDA in isolation, because it is located by design of law in an intergovernmental space. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Cheney can deal with the balance of the questions.
Thank you, Chair, members. With your permission, Chair, I'm just going to ask Ms. Nwashing, Magagula, and Mr. Koza just to cover some of the points which they may have better information on.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will deal with the question of transformation and empowerment. Why did we not meet the target of youth and people living with disabilities, as well as women? We had a shortage of service providers in those designated groupings, maybe because they did not have proper CIDD grading for the projects that we were doing. But Chair, we have since established a unit called Transformation and Empowerment, and we are in discussions with social groupings like SAWIC, the BBCBE, and any other formation that represents those designated groupings. And we are working with our sister agency, NHBRC, to have training programs for those groupings. and to make sure that they do participate in our supply chain. We monitor it on a monthly and on a quarterly basis as to what is the procurement spend. And the transformation and empowerment sits in our bid committees to ensure that our specifications, our terms of reference are taking into consideration those groupings. And Jay, we intend to up the numbers so that we can meet the human settlement scorecard of 10% set aside for youth and 30% set aside for women. So it is a concerted effort on our side to make sure that those groupings are actually accommodated. We have emerging contractors program as well that we work with, so that when we have our database specifically for emerging contractors. I know that in the Eastern Cape we have established that, and Mr. Bosco Kosa can tell us how that grouping is doing. But we are conscious about this target that we have to meet, and we are working on it, Chair. Sorry. And then the second item that I would want to talk about, Chair, is the one of supply chain management. As senior management in HDA, we have taken it upon ourselves to make sure that we jointly monitor the activities of the supply chain management, and the policy is in order, the processes, procedures are also in order. And we sit every other week on a fortnight basis in EXCO, and SCM issues are a spending item. We have come up with a register of all the irregular expenditure. We are keeping an eye on all the non-compliance that was identified by the auditors, and also the control deficiencies that we had in the organization. And we are also making sure that we follow the irregular expenditure framework to bring perpetrators to book, investigate what happened, why did the irregular expenditure occur, whether government lost any money, and how do we recover that. So it is a process, Chair, and I'm sure as the quarters evolve, we will come back and give an update on how far we are with dealing with all the items that have been identified that have to do with supply chain processes, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and members. I will build on what Ms. Mashing has stated in terms of the work that we allocate to designated groups. If I would exemplify it with the work that we're currently doing in Nelson Mandela Bay, we have allocated 30% of work to women. If I look at the period FY16 to 19, we have allocated work amounted to 166 million for women, translating to almost 1,400 units. So the work that you stated in terms of the transformation is that we'll continue to build on that to embody as well as disabled. I'll then address specific questions that have been raised. I will start with the issue in Northern Cape in terms of the program 4. Just to explain that in terms of our IGR team, the target was for the team to establish those platforms with different stakeholders or partners. For the reason why there's this deviation, of which we're saying we need to, we're reviewing the need for such a platform in Northern Cape, simply arises from the fact that there's a good working relationship with the Northern Cape province, which is, from an IGR standpoint, it's driven not necessarily by our team in the IGR department, by the provincial office as well as the regional office, which is why the the agreement that we had, that was the last thing in March 2019, the province agreed in February that we should sign a new agreement for 5 years and then the TSF period. I'll go on then further to exemplify the reasons in which we've not met our targets in terms of the housing units. There are a number of issues why we've not attained those targets. I don't wish to give a lecture to your members, but I need to cite a few examples just to put them into perspective. The first one is predominantly our projects are informal settlements. If I use the Western Cape as an example, the N2 Gateway project, our site two, one is the Joslovo project and the one Boys Town, which both of them are along the N2 as you go to the airport or from the airport. Being informal settlements, we have to engage communities to clear space for construction. And this is a laborious process which we have to demonstrate that we've engaged them over successive periods to ask them to clear space and to move voluntarily, to move. If you look at Joslovo, in one instance, we had 16 families which were to ask to move for a designated area to construct on. 11 families agreed to move and 5 declined to move. As a last resort, we've had to take the legal route to forcefully relocate them, but not onto the streets, but into a temporary holding area, which this has taken a lot of time because we need to document before we go to court that we've done all necessary measures to implore those who do not want to move for construction. One other reason which is key in what we do is that of illegal occupation of areas for construction. I think Nelson Mandela Bay is a good example in that we've got greenfield areas where we're supposed to build and we're ready to build. There's then illegal occupation of such areas which then stops our efforts because we cannot build for those who are not the intended beneficiaries, which means we have to start the process afresh. For example, having to then allocate work to contractors and make sure we've got the qualifying beneficiaries for that. I'll probably stop at that reason. There's quite a number. The third one is that of employment opportunities. In the high state of unemployment, it does happen that at two levels, both from contractors and communities, whereby they want to stop construction on our site because they want to be employed in those projects. For example, you get contractors who want to be employed at the ward level when work is accorded to contractors across a wider spectrum. It does affect the work that you have on the ground. I'll stop there, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll speak to a few things that were raised in the financial statements. I think there was a question relating to financial spending, 96% versus performance of the organization. I think it's 53. I think the correction that we needed to make was that 43 was for quarter four, but the annual performance of the entity is actually 70%. So the spending in line with performance actually 96 to 70%. Specific question was asked of program one overspending of 25% and how it was funded. If you look at the report that we have on page 25 in the annual report that talks to program spending, you can see that the other programs actually reported savings on those spending, which means that those savings were able to cover the spending of the 25%. Administration is program one, Chairperson, which means that it was funds that were used in the administration. What happened is that there was a restructuring process that was planned in the year where funds were then used, you know, to resource that framework in the TA. And then the agency saw an increase in the cost on the organizational review of the project and as well as legal costs. So the question also was asked in terms of the legal costs. You will remember that the first part of the year, the last part of the year, that is when the disciplinary process started, when the executives were sent out on suspension, and towards the end of the year, in April, we saw them being resigning in the organization. Then the legal fees that rose up to six million that we reported, the 3.5 that we reported last year, was as a result of some of the spending that are relating to those disciplinary processes. I'm sure in this quarter you will see that we continue to incur legal expenses specifically for those disciplinary processes. I think a question was also raised regarding the reported surplus last year, 2018, when we were not, I think, whether there's a performance also for last year. We reported, when I first started, I did mention that the 2018 results were restated. What was actually reported last year was 1.6 million, a small surplus of 1.6 million. So what happened this year is that we found errors in the management fees recognition that was happening last year, which we then restated the results. Looks like it was an excessive, and it was just the management fees that we correctly reported on in this year, in line with the accounting standards. And I think I will also then talk to a question that was raised regarding the lack of financial systems and where Indian Audit was. We have a very capable legal Indian Audit function that we have outsourced. When we came in this year, they had actually performed a number of audits that, you know, they gave the organization to do. The trick with the internal audit is in the findings and what the organization does in implementing the findings. What we have just done now is to make sure that the implementation plans actually talk to the root causes, because what we would see is that we will just list all those findings and say management agrees with findings without putting root cause, implementation actions that will talk to addressing the root cause. This is what we've actually done now, and in our audit action plans, we've included those implementation plans that talk to those root causes. Lack of financial systems, not necessarily lack of financial systems, Chair. I would say it's just in the practice, you know, that was there in managing the systems. What we've done now is that we could see that why we could not pick up, I think that's the other question that was raised, why did you not pick up the 106 million irregular expenditures that auditors actually then picked up? When we got in April, there was no irregular expenditure register. We brought in resources to try, you know, and go back and look at what would be in irregular expenditures. We found some, but it was clear that to address the whole population, go back to the record, would be quite a high task. So from what we had initially reported with what we had done to go back, it wasn't sufficient. But during the audit now, we even went back to the whole population. When Mr. Cheney came, he said, I do not care, go back and let the auditors, and give the auditors all that you can find. And even after that, because it's retrospective, if you do not catch it before you pay and have those checklists that we already have now, the checklist, the checkboxes, that we do not pay when we do not have all this in place that we currently are doing, it is very difficult to then go retrospectively and try and dig. We did look at almost 100% of the population, but even then, it wasn't sufficient to for the auditors to say we're comfortable that you now have accurately and completely disclosed irregular expenditure, hence, you know, the qualification. Otherwise, what management is doing now, and what management is implementing with irregular expenditures, that Ms. Mosheng has specified, is ensuring that going forward we're picking up them and we're stopping them from actually happening. I think there was also a question around $14 million for a supplier, what is being done clearly when a supplier has been found to be irregular, will stop all work that we cannot give them more work, even if they're in the panel. So that is what we've done. We've stopped all work given to any of those suppliers that have been found to be included in the irregular expenditure measures. But we continue with the investigations and making sure that we condone and we investigate and bring consequence management to those that have been found to have been involved in this. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of points. I mean, I think Bosco raised or indicated what some of the reasons are for the non-achievement of the targets in relation to the housing units. I just want to refer members to page 111, point 16, which it says, in November 2018, the HDA returned 1.5 billion rand unspent in provincial project funds to National Treasury. This is an instruction from National Treasury as a result of non-compliance to Section 17 of the Division of Revenue Act. Now, Chair, what happened was that that also had a major implication and probably was the catalyst which resulted in a substantial amount of the inability, for example, of Gauteng, Northwest, Limpopo, and in particular those accounting officers were not and still are not impressed in relation to what we did. The point I want to get is that post the last 2 months, we've undertaken an exercise to restore the confidence, because I think the one issue that one finds in the HDA is a lot of what happens is alien. These things are probably run-of-the-mill stuff. In any bureaucracy, there is governance, there is regulation, there is compliance. Be it government, be it the private sector, be it large corporations, there's always a bureaucracy with the necessary checks and balances. And in the case of the HDA, that was not that compliance, that regulation, and that governance, and that understanding of the simplicity of what needs to happen. Because in many respects, an agency, and I don't say this lightly, is very easy to run if you've got all the systems. And in relation to the HDA, there was no reason for this not to happen. But I think as Ms. Magagula has raised, there were internal audit reports with findings, but none of those reports were taken seriously and implemented. And you have a result of blatant ignoring of the cornerstones of what good governance is. The PFMA, the Public Audit Amendment Act in relation to recovery applies to accounting officers for entities. So it's not something that should be taken lightly. So I thought I might just raise that issue. The second issue which I want to raise is the issue around the question of the spatial injustice and the procurement of land. The HDA does this in conjunction with the provinces and the municipalities. And in the annual report on page 170, there's a land inventory of what some of the land that the HDA has acquired, and this is either done with the provinces or the municipalities. But in relation to that, one of the things that the HDA does, and quite well because of its technical and expertise and basis, it is able to identify whether those pieces of land or property comply with the necessary spatial transformation integration objectives. So that's something that gets applied. Chair, just to restate a couple of things. The irregular contracts that have not complied with where there's been deviations, all of those contracts must be regularized in terms of the process. So what happens is, and I think Daphne is raised that, I just want to confirm and make sure that the committee is aware of it. None of those irregular contracts there won't be any payments made as a result of an irregular contract. The effect of that is that if you do that, or if I authorize that as the accounting officer, it's going to end up in the irregular expenditure finally for next year. So the instruction is that all of those things must go through a process of investigation. Each individual contract must be investigated, found out what is wrong. We must go to Treasury, we must either go to Minister as executive authority, and then report that either through yourselves to SCOPA to indicate this is how it will be regularized. The restatement has been indicated, but I think it's also just to indicate, Chair, this committee, its predecessors, did raise concerns around the HDA. But the point about it is that if things are not disclosed, then neither the committee, neither the department will pick up and will end up in an audit. And eventually these things catch up with you. So for example, the restatement of the figures in relation to what was the 20 million, 21 million against the 3 million, that was picked up. It will be picked up. And there's action that needs to be taken against that, because how is it possible that the auditors, together with the CFO, were able to actually put in an incorrect figure, but there was no proper internal audit or oversight of that. So that's the thing. The other important thing is that there was no internal risk function, or there was no functional internal risk function. We've just now activated the process to appoint a manager. There's no internal control systems and management. There's no register. If you walk into the HDA or walked into the HDA a month ago, bids were not properly secured. They were kept on people's desks. Those are some of the issues. So it's a very simple thing, and I think there's a number of members here that were either members of provincial legislatures or municipalities. These are a given. They're taken for granted that you'll have a registry, that you'll have an internal audit, that you'll have internal control, that you'll have risk, that you will have a proper SCM system, that you will have a register. There'll be proper delegations. These are just some of the issues which I think have raised the issue. And I think we must not brush these things down. But I mean, I just want to leave the committee. There's a book called Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, which says that when you create chaos, you can then loot, or you can then create a situation where irregularities, non-compliance, all of those things occur. And that appears to be the case of what happened here. But the last point I think we must just indicate is that at various points during the 2016, 2017, 2018, the department did highlight some of these points. They were drawn to the attention of the board, but I think there was just a delay between the board accepting the reality of what was said. Chair, just to indicate the last point, the HDA is not a case where everything is bad, as I've indicated. I mean, if you look at the stats, I think it's just the employment stats in relation to almost 50% of the professionals that are employed by this organization are African female. More than 50%. Of the institution's workforce is made up of female. A balance is male. But I think it's important also to note that the work that is currently going, so for example Limpopo have restated their commitment to the HDA because of the good work that provincial department had in relation to the HDA. The Western Cape. In fact, the city of Cape Town have confirmed their ability to want to do work. Gauteng, KZN, the Northern Cape, the Free State. I mean, in the Free State, the HDA planners are busy assisting with town planning approvals in some of the Free State towns that don't have planners. We're doing that in the case of the Northern Cape. So I think it's important to note, Chair, that what was originally intended is being done. And I think the only thing that we need to be able to do, I think, with the committee together with the department and the minister, is we've committed that whoever's in place, Chair, because I'm acting, I'm only acting, and I think it's just important that the oversight continues so that the institution is buffered against any repeat of what happened. Thanks.
Getting
old.
Thank you very much. I think it is right. The questions were asked, there were enough questions that needed not necessarily enough from you, but honest responses. You did give those honest responses. Whether they are good or bad, it's not the issue. The issue is the correct answers they're given. So that's fine. we are not here to listen to good news. It's even bad news, but it is because it is big news. And then it's our response, and how to respond to give the government and the given information. And maybe that you really do, there's an element to what I expect of you in the future is that you must get proper action plan that needs to redress the problems that you are now facing. Because up until you respond, could we not have asked the questions, would have left here with a very angry face, but there's nothing in the department. Now when you have asked me, and they left the question as present, you start realizing that no, you restated the problem. You understated the problem and you gave a simple solution and a difficult solution to the problem. So that's fine. For instance, I did not hear the name of the gentleman at the back.
Pascal Koza.
When the member was raising the issue of 20% vis-à-vis safety and 5% vis-à-vis death, it is because in the plan you wrote 20 and you wrote 5. But then in your response you say if you can show God that in Eastern Cape of Goldberg is even 30, so but once the plan is under planning, You want to come and say claim a bonus for overspending when you have missed the target. But the target is there, it's not trained. And that's what they say is raising at the point. So but change it, even in the very right what you are supposed to do and if it will help us. And I'm happy quick is that because that's what you said in the human settlement when I report that. Don't build a house where you do not know who is the beneficiary. Because the result of that action is that people will vandalize the house or they will illegally occupy the house. I'm coming from Mpumalanga. From Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Eastern Cape. When you come to Gauteng or you come to Western Cape, when you see an empty house, you will occupy it. we don't pray with the house. We have no place to sleep over by. And when you want to move us out with 8 hours and 45, so you can't. I suspect the board you are putting here is the board that you are saying you were praised. Don't show us the good one. Where is the bad one? Because once you know the bad one, then we must be afraid of them. Because they have done bad. So you are saying this one, okay. The thing that they did well, that's why we are here, that's why I'm sorry. It's this one that you check by the conductor of the he is not necessarily related to bad places. I was surprised if it was him. I know he is not related to that. But in the net, I mean, we must know these other bad ones that Once you come across the name, you must stay away from that name. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. If I heard very well, all allegations with regards to the issue of maladministration have been investigated, some charges have been laid, and other cases would have been finalized before the end of March 2019. So my question is, how many cases are closed by now? And the next question is, one of the main objectives of HEA is to address the land acquisition. What methods are put in place to ensure that the HEA put a stop to the conversion of agricultural land into residential land and private security complexes? What are they doing to ensure that land being identified closer to CBD to ensure integration? Thank you.
I'm good.
Just to put this comment. You are making a very important point, Chair, that we are, as much as we have interest in those that does, that fit well in the board member, but we are too much interested in those ones because, you know, the bad ones. We don't want to commit similar mistakes and put the, you know, our people and finance at risk even in the future, because those ones are too dangerous. So I see that in the responses, Chair, that matter is not properly covered. You know, and I don't know whether it's because it was forgotten or it's because they are not the right people to give us those things. But secondly, Chair, is that you see when we say we have achieved blah 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 certified and how many housing units and all that, I think we must be friendly, you know, with the term of actually providing the provinces where these housing units are in most of the cases. So that if I just want to pass by, you know, and have a look of what, you know, because what is written here may be different to what is on the ground. We have seen these things where there are very good reports. People come here with clear hands, but when you go to the ground, you look at the quality of that particular house that was built, something else, and our people start complaining and putting their lives at risk. So just those were the comments I want to share. Otherwise, thanks for the report and confidence. You know, you said it's Mr. Lichavali. Yeah, you know, you can see he's very confident. I like this attitude.
Thank you. I think my neighbor here has put it quite well. Just to add to this, because of what is presented to us, Chair, I think we may need the committee to request the agency to come to the committee as a matter of agency, just to outline exactly these programs now, to programmatize them, these audit findings. But Asma Kakula robbed me. The question is expenditure against the target. You explained the percentage to say no, It's not 43, it's actually, it's not 47, it's 76 or something like that. But after that, but you still leave out the issue of the target versus what you've spent. I think that was the main question. But Chair, your summary, it gives us some comfort to range it. Mr. Shawani, Mr. Chenley, and the team, they are showing that they are turning. I'd like to see more reports on when this, but when I was on the commission, when I was like, you know, Shahamo, I'm not sure whether it's part of this meeting, but it's not necessary for the committee chair, but it's just a passerby comment. And also, when we sit here as a committee, elected by the people of South Africa, comes something in mind to say, for us to read such situation, how well done are these people? What is it normal, really, Chair, for us to find ourselves in this? Who? You said you need to know these bad people. It's so big, this thing, to your point, Jaro. What is the influenza for people to do such things? Cut tax money. Okay,
clear, we'll leave it. Yeah. That is
the
thing. Yeah,
thank you
very much. Okay. No, wait. I forgot the
I wanted to follow up on the 30% issue. Firstly, especially for the Northern Cape, I've got a personal interest because I'm from there. And what I know is that in terms of the poverty levels of that province, just too high. The unemployment is also high. And we all know that the face of poverty is a woman. So we'd like to see our women also participating in the mainstream of the economy. So it's very, very important that the women occupy that space. So in the presentation, I really didn't get it properly. Maybe I didn't understand, but to me it was not coming up. What is it which you have done so far to make sure that you involve the women? Look, that province is a province of mines, it's a province of agriculture, but women are playing a very minimal role, not because they are not interested, it's because there are no platforms which are consciously created to make sure that women get empowered. So you can't just leave it for chance.
Okay. Leave our objective. When we were doing the case somewhere, I don't see it now, but it's been over there. That's something.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps, Chair, it's important to distinguish between the two sets of boards. The board that the Labour Court judge expressed a scathing opinion of is the board of the SRA, mm-hmm. not the board of the SDA. Yes, I thought I must draw that distinction, but I see the two matters are being conflated.
Why is it mentioned here?
Chair, I was making an overview of both entities, but I'll come back to that. Chairperson, the matters that perhaps agitate members of the board or sort of committee, because The real question is, how did we get here? And we are here. What is the extent of the damage? Chairperson, I would imagine that the members would appreciate the nature of investigations. One, and then the follow through in terms of what you do with the findings. I would plead with the members to allow that process to unfold, because in as much as investigations have been undertaken, it's not the end of the story. People have been charged. I think there is weighing of issues. Do you then go criminal charges? So that process must run its course without us, and I'm saying us, perhaps getting into that space, ultra jure, what's the term? Ultra jure. But that's why I'm cautious to not over-ventilate those issues, lest you undermine those processes. As for the Zondo Commission, Chairperson, we are already there, all of us. Because the Zondo Commission took a view to look at everything. All the entities, all the departments have been required to submit certain information. It's a wide-ranging probe, Chairperson. So we are already there. I thought I would just confirm the modus operandi of the Commission. It sought us to submit all things possible, and it's been done. The investigators there are looking at what they need to see. Look at. I'm sure that process is running its course. And therefore, Chair, I just want to overemphasize one little point. A careful reading of the Housing Development Agencies Act, you will note that this is but an agency, as opposed to it being an authority. So the agency can identify that it can do, but as an agency of one or other sphere of government, the planning authority in terms of land use management, that vests with the municipality. That's what Spluma says, Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act. So the decisions of approving land use changes and so forth are not necessarily for the agency to make. The agency's view, on the one hand, is informed by what is the spatial transformation agenda adopted by government. But the decisions about land use changes in any locality are made by the municipality. It's a painful reality. You can advise the municipality against going a particular route, but the municipality is the government. They will make their decisions with what the agency is advising or against what the agency is advising. I'm just saying those are some of the micro limitations that the agency will face. That is why it's better to work in a collaborative manner as opposed to imposing a particular view in this regard. Chair, I'll leave to Mr. Cheney to deal with the balance of the question. So, who are these board members? We'll come back to that, Chairperson.
Thanks, I'll be quick. Chair, in relation to the case of this, four people who action was instituted have resigned. Four have been completed and they're part of the disciplinary process. They received sanction which allows them to be still employed, and then there's three that ongoing. This does not preclude the situation where in the irregular expenditure investigations of the 106 the possibility will exist that if people are found to have not complied or acted without the requisite or with the intent of fraud and corruption and malfeasance, that will happen. So we can't discount the fact that there will be additional. Chair, on the issue around the question of the land, and I think Mr. Shibani has raised it, but I think it's just important to note that if you look at the agency, one of the primary responsibilities of the HDA was to identify, procure, release and develop land, and that's land and property. And it's important to note that the IMC has taken a decision that the HDA be the agency of choice in relation to all land identified suitable for human settlements development. And maybe, Chair, with your permission, in response to Member Moshala, I mean, we can bring a report that indicates exactly, because it's a substantial amount of work that's been done. It's very progressive, and it includes some of the land release initiatives, for example, that's been undertaken in Gauteng.
Okay. We should be finished, and I want to talk. I will allow her to talk without being responded to.
Just a comment. I think Mr. Shabani is correct to clarify the issue. I think one of the issues that is a concern for us is that we are fearing the committee. We are fearing the situation because when you look on the court section, there are no timelines attached. When do you think that these issues could be finalized? I want to propose that the department assist us to give to us the timeline of some of the issues that could be finalized. Because our view is that development could be affected. There are areas that could be done so that we are sure
that HDA is coming back to its data. That's my proposal. We'll check that. Okay. Thank you very much. And I think we would make a very proposal that at some point we would want to engage the HDA. Rough because this will come to end in what the Mumfry is talking about. Because indeed we really need to. Either we must bring more men in. Thank you very much, SGA. You are it.
I'll check with her.
It is 12:30 and the light should only be ready by 1. Thank you.
Plan. The total number of indicators in the admin program is 10. We achieved 4 of them, which is 40%. Then on the next slide, Chairperson, we did, I'm going to come to the unqualified audit a little bit later in the presentation. The SHAR did achieve an unqualified audit. We also achieved 86% of the implementation of the information management plan, 86.3% and not 100%, and that's why it's counted as zero. 76.7% of the information communications technology plan was achieved. We did produce the state of the sector report, and then the last one, not the last one, the third from last, is as far as the percentage of the research plan, this is one that hurts us the most, Chairperson. You can just find it. You see that we achieved 94% of the research plan, because under the Act we must recommend policy to the National Department. So if you go onto our website, you'll see a number of very, very important research documents that we've produced, like the norms and standards document, the research into the CRU program, cost drivers, etc., etc. But I'm not making excuses to the committee. If we set the target at 100%, we have to achieve 100%. We did, however, spend the money and achieve 94%. Sometimes you miss a target marginally like that because one or two items in your research plan got delayed in the procurement stage. And that was the case here. And then this development of norms and standards is what our CSM calls a what? Double jeopardy. It was really counted in the research plan, but we didn't make it. It has, however, by the second quarter of the current year, now been concluded. We're very proud of how we've improved stakeholder management. One of the problems in social housing is stakeholders that need to be happy with what you're doing, including tenants. So we've put a lot of effort into having a proper stakeholder management plan and implementing that plan, and we exceeded the target. We had 73 stakeholder engagement sessions against a target of 50, so that's a positive variance of 46%. And we hope that that's going to make a big difference. So now I'm going to move to the second program, which is the regulatory program. Chairperson, some highlights. We needed to accredit another, sign contracts for another 9,000 units. We signed contracts for another 7,656 units. I'll always make the point throughout the presentation where I'm telling you that, in other words, when we counted this, it counted zero towards our performance. It got a zero score. But we did sign contracts for 7,656 units, which is effectively 85% of the target, but we did not sign contracts for the balance, which is 9,000 units. We did fairly well when it comes to transformation. 63.6% of our money went into ODAs, and 63.6% of our FHIs are black majority owned controlled. 62.1% of our conditionally SHIs are black majority owned and controlled. We have a total of 90 conditionally and 12 fully accredited SHIs, and 27 of them have stock, and we're busy regulating, and they're reporting to us on a monthly basis. So, Chair, the one program that we fared very well on is the compliance and regulatory program. We have a total of 12 indicators in the APP on the us, the SRA as a regulator. 10 of the 12 were achieved, which represents 83.3%, which was pretty good because we've been aiming at 80%. I've already told you, and it's on this slide here, that 36,300 units are under regulation. If you go to the next slide, we're very happy that for everybody, because the SRA has a reputation of processing applications for accreditation slowly. Our standard operating procedures require them to be processed within 90 days. We had throughout the 12 months, the average time that it took to process and give an answer on accreditation was 59 days. So call it 60 days. And that means that we processed all of these applications in two-thirds of the amount of time that we were given, which is pretty good. And 96.5% of all regulated institutions, the 27 institutions, submitted their quarterly reports on time and at the required standard. Some of the other targets were, for example, we don't just regulate the institutions. When the institutions aren't doing well, we have to have an intervention plan. And Chair, we've had a number of them. For example, when the vacancy rates are high, it's in this indicator over here, if the vacancy rates are high, or if there's irregular tenanting, we do an intervention. So just to give some examples, we have business turnaround strategies implemented in the Steve Tredy Housing Association, Joshua, First Metro, Hale, and this target is therefore green, so we're pretty happy with it. And then I've already presented the transformation steps. Let me jump over the slide. I gave it to you in the summary. The next one, on the last three, on the, is it the last three? No, the last four on the compliance program. Number one, which is amber, but we've counted it as red, I've already presented. Number two, we're very proud of, there's a strong emphasis on the inner city. So we had a target for how many units we accredited in the inner city. The target was 1,000, we accredited 1,795 of those units. And then the last one, Chair, we didn't do this deliberately, but that last one there is supposed to be red, not green, because we want 15 fully accredited institutions, but we only had 12, and we know we're close to getting 15 because some of the institutions have compliance problems which they have to sort out before they can be upgraded. And then the last indicator on the regulatory side, the last two indicators. We're also very happy because, you know, the committee's heard about the CRU program and the fact that CRU projects need to be brought under regulation. So we set a target to bring four of them under regulation. We ended up signing contracts for six, and we've listed them here. Three of them are in the Limpopo province, and the other two are in Gubunambeki and Mpumalanga province. So we even surprised ourselves by managing to link up property management agreements between accredited SHIs and the local authorities, six of them altogether in those two provinces. And then very difficult, troubled, historical, provincial institutional subsidy projects where we also met the target because we signed property management agreements with these four institutional subsidy funded projects in Johannesburg, Harrison Reef, Everest Court, Trobo. Alright, I'm going to move to the second last program now, Chairperson. The second last program is our capacitation program. We call it SDNT, Sector Development and Transformation. We didn't spend all the money, but I'm going to give you good news about that. We've had a lot of training done in the reporting year, a total of 22 training sessions. Excuse me, Chairperson. It's Sector Development and Transformation. So we call it Sector Development and Transformation because the program's objective is sector development. So the program's objective is to transform the sector and to develop the sector. So it's a lot of training, and we have about a 20 million rand budget where we give training and we empower institutions. So you see there that we didn't spend all of the money because there were some procurement delays, but we've completely caught up. In the first quarter, when you read our end of second quarter report this year, you'll see that we've already spent 50% of the current year's budget. But last year we only spent 71%. And a lot of it went into creating jobs. You see at the bottom there, 22 jobs were created through the signing of the SDA, through this the staff gear up grant that we issued. A total of 919, if you like, classroom participants went through the SHRAS training room in the reporting year. So, chairperson, I'm going to jump over that one. It's a bit too administrative. We've done a lot of work. So, for example, this indicator was one where we had an intervention plan and we had a business turnaround strategy for Steve Tshwete Housing Association because of certain irregularities there, including irregular tenanting. That was successful. Steve Tshwete's accreditation status has remained stable as a conditionally accredited. We weren't as successful on this one, which was the Yeast Housing Association, where we gave an intervention in the hope that we'd be able to accredit their project. But unfortunately, for technical reasons, we could not, you know, unit sizes and the fact that they had really enjoyed provincial funding. I won't comment again on the expenditure. We were disappointed, but we are confident that this year we will soak up what we didn't spend last year, because the contracts were all signed in the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter of the reporting year, and we'll spend all of the money in the current year. Chair, I move to the last program now, which is the project development program. The difficult work is the stuff on the left-hand side where we are very stressed, but we know what we have to do in order to meet these targets going forward. So in the reporting year, we developed a further 2,284 good quality social housing units, and we tenanted a further 2,471. These are short of the target, as you'll see just now. But when it comes to our expenditure, we exceeded the budget, as I've already indicated to you. We spent 5% more than what was given to us, and we spent 95.5% on ODAs. And then, Chair, this is the table that will tell you how many units of the 27,000 have completed. So, third column from the left, 14,000, roughly 14,000 completed and tenanted. And then the column on the third from the right is the number of units contracted but not yet under construction. And the column next to it on the left, 9,273 units, are the units that were under construction when the year ended. So of the 27,000 units, we did have contracted and either completed or under construction 8,700 units more than the 27,000, but we didn't have completion certificates for the full 27,000. You can read for yourself some of the flagship projects. I've been asked to keep it to 15 minutes, so I'm not going to be able to present them, but they're there. Some of them, like the two on this page, are very, very slow. These two on this page are very, very fast. They're flying, in fact, because they've got very, very good developers in them. If the committee would like to make a trip, advertisement time, to the West Rand, we are very, very happy in the West Rand of Gauteng with the progress that we're making in Krugersdorp with the Mogale Junction project. It really is moving fast. With the Mohlakeng project in Randfontein, it's really moving fast. And with the Western Area project, Western Area Borwa, which is really, really moving fast. So, chairperson, there's a lot going on in the West Rand currently with good projects, is what I was trying to say. The last program I want to present is the Project Development and Funding Program, Mr. Chairperson and members. They had a total of 8 targets for the year, which 5 of the 8 were achieved, which represents 62.5%. Unfortunately, I've already confessed that the first one was missed. This is the number of units not only completed but tenanted, where the warm bodies inside the unit. So we achieved 64% of that target. In other words, 2,471 people moved in when our target was 3,856. So that's not good enough. The second one, we missed more dramatically, because on the actual completion certificates, we had a 4,820 unit target, of which we obtained 2,284 completion certificates. The rest of the units, and much more than that, were under construction but not complete. Chair, we've got 48 active contracts at the moment. 39 of those 48 are healthy contracts, where we don't have performance problems with a grant recipient, but the other 9 are not healthy contracts, and we have to really hold hand the grant recipient. What we have to do, if based on the last number of years, we have to have more projects under construction simultaneously. So if we need about 80 projects that are active, 80 contracts that are active, if we are going to keep up with the target. And that's what we're aiming to do. And so that 9,000 accreditation units that you saw earlier is what's going to get us to that. And that's why where this target comes from, Chair. This is the number of units we wanted to pre-assess so that we can sign contracts. We had a target of 6,270. We pre-assessed 10,242. The number of inner city units was missed as far as the number of units we had a target to assess 3,135. We assessed 2,589. So that was marginally missed. But it was 82.5% of the target. I already told you what the expenditure did, because our budget wasn't 778. It was a smaller amount, I think 730-something. And that's where the additional 4% came from. And then the last few indicators for the project development program before we move to the outcome of the audit is that, I think these two over here, Chairperson, is that when it comes to expenditure, even though the auditors did not agree with our calculation method and have advised us on how to create smarter indicators, they do, however, agree that we exceeded the target as far as percentage that we spent on ODAs that were majority black owned and percentage that we spent overall on black majority owned and controlled companies, which was 205%. Before I hand to the CSM chairperson, the last slide I want to present is the outcome of the audit. We are admittedly... No?
By the way, we must come and engage with you after lunch. We will present the financial after lunch. But the lunch itself, all the...
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to give you a high level on what the results of our annual audit are, and then our CSM is going to take us through the financial into more detail. So, Chair, it's all just on this single slide here, the summary. The 2018-2019 financial year audit opinion is an unqualified audit opinion. There is one emphasis of matter, and it relates to the restatement of certain figures for the corresponding period in the previous year. Chair, but just to indicate, very, very technical in nature, there were two of them, because when the SHRA has reported on accrued leave, we've done it in a particular kind of way year after year, and reported it, made a provision for it, but the auditors And we've accepted it. We've agreed with the auditors ultimately. Require that the accrued leave is recorded as a liability in our financials. So that had to be corrected for the previous year. And then the second one was just the recognition of the interest on our income. Because of the fact that there's a portion of the interest that we record as revenue, which in fact we might contractually have to pay out if it's applied for. But our CSM, what I'm saying is that they're both very, very technical, but they did result because we had to make, we had to restate the figures for the prior year. This did result in a matter of emphasis. There were, though, no material findings on the annual financial statements for 2018, on the statements themselves for 2018-2019, because we agreed with the auditors. There was an unfortunate compliance matter, and it does relate to irregular expenditure, an amount of 26.7 million. And Chair and members, just so that the committee understands what this was, we signed a contract for the delivery of a certain project in Soweto, social housing project. Believing that we were compliant with the legislation, our interpretation of that legislation. The difficulty that we ran into is that the grant recipient, their land rights was in terms of a sublease. And when the auditors pointed out to us that if the land was owned by government or by a public entity, then the land availability rights had to be directly with the landowner. It could not be in terms of a sublease. So ultimately we had to take that on the chin. So it is a non-compliant with those regulations. It is an amount of 26.7 million, which we're working on correcting, either by recovering or regularizing, and that process has already commenced. Although we are disappointed in it, it does represent not an insignificant portion, but it represents 3.4% of our total expenditure for the year, that 26.7 million. And then Chairperson, the only other two things that I would say summary-wise is that when it comes to the predetermined objectives, the auditors did have certain criticisms about the method of calculation of some of our indicators and their views on whether the indicators were smart or not. We agreed with most of what they said, and if we had agreed with all of them, there would be no material findings in regard to predetermined information. But there was one indicator that we didn't change in the final report in accordance with the auditor's reading, and that's why you'll find in our audit report their commentary on where they find that our reporting on predetermined objectives, they make a material finding, which we've agreed to. We've been very careful in the new cycle to make sure that our indicators are double and triple checked so that they are smart and that the methods of calculation are correct or make sense. And then there was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Chair, I'm going to hand over to our CSM.
Chairperson and honourable members, in presenting our financials, I'll start with the balance sheet, and I'd like to bring to your attention the following highlights, that the cash and cash equivalents remain almost at par, but if you look at the non-current assets, they have increased substantially. The property, plant and equipment has increased from 1.8 million to 7.8, and intangibles have increased from 249,000 to 2 million. The reason for this is that as the SHRA grew, members, you remember earlier on we showed you how the employees and the staff complement of the SHRA grew. We then had to secure and move to a bigger building. Now we've moved to a bigger building in the same office block, does the increase in the property plant and equipment, because we had to refurnish the offices and also ensure that our IT is stable and get IT software to run to meet the demand of the growing organization. On current liabilities, I just want to talk to the provisions, because the provisions are the main cause of the emphasis of META. It pertains to the interest, and I think if we can look at in the annual report on your note 11, we have restated the provisions and included an amount of 56 million in the previous year and 59 million in the current year. This is for the interest end on capital grants that haven't been paid to grant recipients yet. The aim is for us at the end of the year or during the year to reinvest the money back into the social housing sector by improving the projects themselves or assist any ailing SHI or delivery agent. And then if we can move to the next slide, which is the performance statement of performance. Just to highlight there, Chairperson, is that the revenue decreased from the previous layer from 926 to 825. This is due to the cuts across in human settlement. And on the same, at the same time, then the program cost increased by 26% from 623 million to 783 million. Chairperson, I think when you look at the outflow of funds, it looks like you would expect that you find a similar impact on the cash and cash equivalents, but because of the reduction in the actual income that came in, that's the reason why we see at that 1 billion mark. And then Chairperson, on the next one, which is the statement of net changes. Just a highlight is the prior year adjustment, which is an amount of 32 million. And this amount is, again, a restatement on the interest amount, which we have agreed as what with the auditors that the amount on an annual basis will be treated as a provision, because we do not know when the grant recipients will come and request for the funds. And every year we'll just reverse it back until they are requested by the grant recipient. And then the last one would be the cash flow. Chapters on the cash flow statement, our emphasis again is on the, I think I've already highlighted it, is the reduction in the cash inflow, and the increase in the cash outflows, plus the investment, which is the property, which was the investment in the property plant and equipment. Chairperson, there's one statement that you didn't include here, which was of interest, and was, it is on page, can I just find it? It's the statement of budget comparison. I think we should have included it in our presentation, because it then shows you that we have actually, it looks like we have overspent on the current budget allocation, but that is not true, because we managed to have a accumulated fund carried over to the following year. What you have agreed on is that you will introduce a line item in the statement of comparison budget and actual to reflect an amount that actually will cover the committed expenditure from the previous year to the current year, so that there's no over expenditure. Over expenditure that will be reported going forward will truly be over expenditure that has been incurred, and we'll be able to then explain why we have over expenditure during the financial year. Chairperson, the statement that I'm referring to is on page 72, with explanation notes on page 73. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. There we are. implementation is straightforward. Let's talk to you. Just as a general norm, I don't know whether you want to keep your target. For instance, you measure yourself on a 100% success rate. And 99% you write in as a non-performance. A non-performing pattern does not, is a non-performing pattern, whether you're from one or 99, according to you. Now, at the time when you want to recognize excellence, you will not be given anything because you're not, even in your own standards, you have not achieved at 99%. That's what you yourself are saying. If I put 99, 98, when others they put their acceptable standards at 90, 85, you may put it at 100, it is your own. So you should understand that at the time when you want to recognize good performance, at 99 you will regard you as a failure according to your own standards. And therefore, there are implications of such attitude. When you get unqualified statements, but in your own body report you have got a lot of failure to achieve, where does that come from? Because it should speak to your success rate on day-to-day work that you are seeing to be clean, you're telling you that you know it properly and so forth and so on. I mean, I think that you need to reconsider that approach, because it creates an operational problem. Those that must attend you have got a difficult. That's why you are here now. You have got 86% out of 100. In your end result, you're saying no performance. Other people have got 51, 60%. They write with you, have got 60%, you've got 20%. And then they can give variation. Though the word variation to me is hiding quite a lot of good and bad things. Variance is a lot of us to either overspend, underspend, or you fail to spend. It's just like variance. And that's the only concern. I want the content of the report, the culture, there is work going on in the process. To me, I appreciate that. But you yourself are telling us not to appreciate it because you have failed according to your own standards. You must face the consequences of your own judgment, because it is you who are judging yourself. You have failed your money. It's no one else but yourself. Sure. It being the case, I'm quite uncomfortable, but let me hear what the members are saying.
On the 23rd, 6,700,000 plus irregular expenditure. I appreciate the fact that law was followed at the MFMA because it specifies what needs to be done in the presence of the irregular expenditure. But I see that when you investigated, you discovered that there were a wrong interpretation of the law. And I'm worried whether your legal team, I don't know whether it's the correct way to say they are, you know, highly qualified to combat such, because you will come across, you know, other legal challenging matters in the future, which will require the correct interpretation of law. And you can't continue to, you know, to commit the same mistakes with the same team. Obviously, something else must be done. So I needed to get a comment other than that of investigating, recovering where necessary and all that, to say what else is going to be done, you know, on those that assist you now in the legal challenges. But also check the, I appreciate the contract that you have signed already. I'm not sure the contract or what, about 7,000 something units to be constructed in the Mpumalanga, I think it's that one. Because a lot of my shareholders are excited about that. And I want to know whether in your plan, you know, are we able to, you know, to know that, okay, maybe in this financial year, you'll be dealing with these projects in these provinces, you see, in these areas, you see, so that we don't only, you know, listen, you know, the Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Tswane, and all that, because provinces are nine. And just, you know, a picture of your plan going forward. But I appreciate the fact that at least now, other than the provinces, which some of these provinces have got now more than one, two projects, we want these projects to be across provinces, because we are, it's a national entity, I think. So it must look like how we are structured as the country. It mustn't only be counted. It must be Mpumalanga, KZN, Eastern Cape, the Bobo, Northern Cape, all over. So I wanted to, and to check also that, to prevent a situation whereby the east construction that has happened, the project is complete, but there is no one staying here. What's your plan when you construct, when somebody has, there is a beneficiary for you start by constructing? Because as Honorable Mashiko has said, we don't want to see vacant houses, we just occupy them. Because we don't have space. If I come from Uluni in KZL and I come to site in search of a job, there is a vacant house. Even if it's vacant and locked, I break it and get in and stay there. Then after that, you have challenges now of trying to remove me out, because we now understand even the law, Mashiko. Yes. But no, after 48 hours, then you must undergo a certain process to remove me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I wanted to find the comment on that. Otherwise, I appreciate the work this entity really is doing, as I said. We can see that something is happening. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Two administrative requests, not questions. Would it be possible under program 2 for us to get a list of your accredited social housing institutions? That's number one. Number two request, program 4,
is it possible to get a list of the outcomes aggregated per province in terms of the numbers? And then my question relates to just the presentation isn't numbered, but the specific slide does have a number on it, it says number 34. The total number of units completed in the MTNF period. I'd like to just note that KwaZulu-Natal seems to be doing incredibly well. Achieved more than 83% of its targets, and the Eastern Cape is doing pretty well as well. But provinces like Limpopo and the Northern Cape have literally given us a zero result in 5 years. Not nothing. Zero. Not one. And Mpumalanga, 6%. What can we as a portfolio committee do, and what is the Shura doing to, obviously, serious capacity issues in these provinces? I don't know if they're political or administrative challenges, probably a combination of those. But, you know, we have 9 provinces in South Africa, and all 9 provinces need to be demonstrating results. And what's more egregious about these provinces are home to large mining communities and people who are not earning huge corporate wages and probably can't afford to access private sector funding for bonds and the act. So are probably more reliant on social housing than some other provinces and capital cities. So I think it's outrageous that these provinces have delivered nothing in 5 years. And I'd like to know what remedial actions are being put in place.
Were you not aware of SHRAS Regulation 19-1A when you awarded the capital grant to a social housing institution? If yes, why did you not comply?
Thank you, Chair. I think I would agree with my colleague here that when the positive institution was headed forward, the only area is of my practical experience. The CEO has mentioned Harrison Reed or Reed?
Reed.
I know what is happening there. Even this last weekend, I met people that have shown interest on that. The department has said that that's not their problem. I'm surprised today when they see that. That's their problem.
Where is this way?
In Johannesburg.
Yeah, I
yes. Okay. So without arguing on whether yes or no, I will just report to those committees of mine. Say, look, this is the report. Can you go to Shrine and clarify? My neighbor, they've been working with them, the O'Reilly guys. O'Reilly and Navena. So they know Chair, they've worked with them. In the last presentation, Chair, there was this development that was intended to take place in Cape Town. I think it was very important. For whatever reason, the city was not agreeing with all. Can maybe the shelters of how far are they? Another specific question, Chief. Are there no hijacked buildings? I'm asking it for a second time. Previously for the council. Are there no hijacked buildings across the country that are SHRA owned? All supported by SHRA in terms of their program, because it's not 100% SHRA in the country that we know of.
The last one, sir. I must say, the issue of stakeholder management is a very important issue in Islam must continue to engage. But, check, in all our cities or our towns, there are neglected buildings or there are land lots left. They are not having land lost. Mashallah, as the mayor of Johannesburg, is moving very strong on that. Are there any collaborations with the mayor of Johannesburg? Or are you really taking this program to other cities where you identify these buildings and engage the landlord? If the landlord is present, if absent, you capture the building or you
expropriate.
Or you expropriate, and this English is not owned by EFF. Wait, so no one will claim victory on this expropriation. Thank you.
There were two questions that we were having which were not the issue. The third thing I want to know to be, you're saying you are forced to accept that I could live in the last city. I don't understand why you accept that. A cruise is money which was supposed to pay yesterday, which is with you. You have not paid. How does it become a liability for you? I don't understand why you got rich with that. The second point is the issue of, you are not telling the reasons why did you, were you made to go and work on established land. Does that mean that you did not do, or whoever was, as far as the land did not do due diligence of who, the level of ownership of the land. And it seems like yourself, I don't expect you to do such elementary mistake, because you might do, if you do that, it will take a first time to increase the reflection in the country as a whole. Before you do, you must be charged with duplicate. I was using the term because a lot of people are giving time back to me, so I cannot use the term. Let me hear your responses
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought it's important to locate some of the work that SHRA does within the national construct, in part to respond to some of the questions. The reality that is emerging for SHRA and generally for our affordable rental housing programs is this phenomenon of rent default and the immediate cousin to that, wherein the tenants, after some time, demand ownership of these units.
Rent to buy?
No, it's not rent to buy, because we must draw a distinction. A rent to buy development is designed as such from the start. You can't halfway decide to do something else. Even so, under duress, it has to still be designed and proper due diligence done and so forth. And that's probably a matter that the committee is going to have to rise to, because the rental housing sector may well collapse if this phenomenon is not countered. And I'm saying countered constructively, because in any residential property system, there will always be owners and tenants, any system globally. And therefore, Shra finds itself confronting the phenomenon where social housing institutions that they are regulating are under stress because tenants default, and you hear this outcry about the evictions that they have to follow. Parallel to that is then the tenants who are demanding ownership. So I'm just saying that issue, it's before us. It requires to be navigated quite carefully. Of course, those tenants that require ownership, they must be directed into the appropriate pathway towards ownership. Similarly, those that default, there are other programs that can assist. But Chair, I thought it's important to sketch that, but also to confirm that Shra is a national entity that is a national operation. The difficulty that we sit with is that we have declared social housing social housing restructuring zones across different cities. There's a big number. It is only in a restructuring zone that you can invest this grant, because in declaring a restructuring zone, you have to take into account proper location, closer or proximity to other opportunities and so forth. Now, the packaging of projects in any restructuring zone is not done by the Shra per se. It is undertaken by, in some cases, municipalities if they have a social housing institution. In some cases, it's done by private parties that then register themselves as social housing institutions. In both instances, if that pipeline is not matured, I want to pick one because I'm very familiar with it, Polokwane. There's a huge demand, but the packaging of projects in that space has been very weak. What is that social housing in Polokwane?
Harena.
It has gone through a lot of ups and downs and so forth. The municipality has lent and so forth. But it is then the packaging of projects that can be funded. If there's no project that can be funded, the Shra, quite frankly, can't do much. It's almost like you are force-feeding that institution, which hasn't overcome its own problems, to administer the development. So you're going to run into problems down the line. So the distribution is desirable. Equitable distribution across the provinces is desirable. But bear in mind, it's a capital problem. If there is no project that can be funded, you have to go with those that are ready at that point and work with these ones, these provinces, these cities, to grow the pipeline and prepare the projects. That's really our perspective on the distribution. Lastly, Chair, it may be unfair to ask the Shra to comment on the City of Cape Town land disposal. I'm saying the Shra because it's not his land, but I can comment on it. In any case, it's a matter that is in the public domain. It's a matter that is contested between the city, the province, and the national government. The conversations we've had with the city such that that trajectory is unsustainable. And I think we are finding each other in that city. The trajectory that says in that part of the city, this inner city part, you do not proactively support housing for the lower income market. That trajectory is not sustainable. And therefore, there's effort. You would recall the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure suspended the sale of some properties in the city center here. Why? Because the idea is to use state land, across the three spheres of government, to advance partial transformation, to advance inclusivity, to advance diversity. So that conversation is still on the cards. That one property may be one, but it's actually a distraction in my view, because you require to look at the city in its totality. The land that the government will release for human settlement here in the city is quite extensive. And therefore, the discourse around what the city does with its own properties finds expression in that context. Chair, I think we've moved because we're polarized. And it's good that we can engage and debate the issues. I'm quite comfortable that we may not be at a point of agreeing, but we are in the point of consensus. I'm very comfortable in that regard. Chair, the high-tech buildings, again, is another phenomenon that is very undesirable, illegal, unlawful, but also dangerous. Because it's two parts, two types of buildings. When a landlord does not manage their property, in fact, they abandon the property, it opens the space for other elements to step in. And it's actually, I'm sure members would have been to the inner cities, you would have seen what we're talking about. It's a phenomenon in Joburg, it's a phenomenon in Tshwane, phenomenon in Polokwane, many cities. If the inner city of any urban space is allowed to decay, you have a mega problem. And therefore, Chair, part of what social housing does is to allow for this regenerative intervention in those spaces. So it's a big phenomenon. Some cities are on top of it more than others. There are also the hidden places such as your Marige, Kimberley, because it's quiet. Polokwane, certain parts of Nelspruit, Wheat Bank there. If nothing is done, the decay will be rapid. So it's a massive issue of urban management, which primarily is a local government function, which is why, Chair, we are very hard on the metros to be able to do something about the inner cities. The good thing is that the work that we are seized with, Minister talked about that in the budget speech, the declaration of priority housing development areas, among other things, seeks to arrest the decline in inner cities. But I thought I must sketch this picture, Chair, before Rory and team, and Alice there, because that's the team, they addressed about the balance of the questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just on the first one, thanks, that's sympathetic interpretation that you've made there about our indicators. We're getting better at this. You know, when you look at our budget and you see that we have expended all of our resources, only a surplus of, what is it, 10 million. We've spent the whole of the operating budget, and then you go to the indicators and you see that the bulk of the work was done. What we have to do to prevent what you're referring to, these negative implications of it looks as if we didn't implement. Performance management has become an extremely technical matter. To the extent that we would even want our internal auditors to give us their advice on whether the indicators that we design are smart. We know that they're measurable, it's just that perhaps the target that we were set to set it as 100%. We need to do it a different way. Usually when we design an indicator and we set the target at 80%, our principals say, no, how can you aim to fail? How can you aim at 80%? You must aim at 100%. But you're right, Chair, it comes back to bite you. We're busy writing next year's APP, and hopefully we can design them more smartly. Then the big question that was asked by three of the members about the 26.7 irregular expenditure. The first part is the question that was asked about, are we setting up our systems? And I think the CSM, because our legal department, our CSM is the CFO, but she also is responsible for legal support. So we are fine-tuning our standard operating procedures precisely so that at the point of contracting, before we even start receiving any invoices, it's been signed off by our legal department. So we do it early enough so that we don't make a mistake like we made with this one, where it's an interpretation of the regulations matter. So the first assurance that I'm giving you is yes, we have a fully functional legal department now. We haven't always had that. And also that the standard operating procedures are being fine-tuned. Now, some of the members have asked, linked to that, why can't we read the regulation 19.1 correctly? So, yeah, look, we've made a mistake, Chair, that's the best way to put it. So we must pay the school fees on it so that we don't make the mistake again. Different people had different interpretations. I personally will admit that I did not read the regulations in such a restrictive way to say, because the landowner was the City of Johannesburg. They had awarded it in terms of a public tender to the Soweto Power Station Mall. That Soweto Power Station Mall, under its own lease agreement with the city, had awarded the land rights to a company called TBGI. So it was a sublease. I regard a sublease to still be a lease, the owners to still be the City of Johannesburg. But the auditors don't read it that way. They read it in a very, very restricted, literal way. And we've learned a lesson. And we must just fix our mistake. And then, Chair, the third question, are we able to know what the yes, we are able to know what the project plans are for the province, because our social housing implementation plan is broken down per province. So you'll see that that plan does not confine itself to delivery in Gauteng alone. So even the 30,000 unit target for the new term is being broken down per province, which is linked to a question asked also about, can the data be broken down per province and be given to members? Yes, it can. And in fact, when we report on projects in our quarterly report, we report on it all active projects per province. So if the committee needs that breakdown, we can get that. The list of accredited social housing institutions is on our website. But even if members want more information about the accredited SHIs, we are required to supply that, and that's easy. Chair, then Mr. Leshabane has commented on, but what about the other provinces? And Mpumalanga and Limpopo have been used as examples. There's a slide here which is slide number 34. It had various levels. It's very different from province to province. You know, it depends on regional specifics, including the most meaningful thing is the official in the province. How invested are they in the social housing program? How invested are they to convene the provincial steering committee? We have reported previously, it was the committee before this committee, it was your predecessors, how much resources we were putting into the provinces that were lagging behind. Those resources are starting to now bear fruit, and we do believe that they will bear fruit in this new five-year term, because about a year ago, only about half of the provincial steering committee meetings were even being convened and happening. We didn't have projects coming through the pipeline. Now we've got projects accredited. I mean, the one in Polokwane, Kharena, is under construction as we speak. We've got 150 units, it's not massive, project under construction in Steve Chwete. Things are starting to move. The one that's not moving, but it will, is the Northern Cape. And then on the prevention of the vacant houses, Chair, we don't release the last 20% of our grant unless the grant recipient has signed the leases with the people, with the tenants. We start construction before we know who the tenants are going to be, because usually the way it works is it's marketed in the area that it exists. So while construction is going on, then the grant recipient will start marketing it. And we'll only release, in fact, not the last 20%, but the last 10%. On Harrison Reef, I can confirm that Harrison Reef was definitely funded way back when, in the 1990s, by the provincial government of Gauteng. And that's why we are trying to bring Harrison Reef under regulation. So Harrison Reef can be referred to the SHRA, but we are in fact already in discussion with Harrison Reef, the same way as O'Reilly and Novena, which we need to be awake to, because the acting DG has referred to the threat of non-payment, which is the payment levels at Harrison, at Novena and O'Reilly, which are not old projects funded by the province, they're new projects funded by the SHRA. The repayment levels are, and we knew that this would happen, Chair, when we were being too sympathetic to the tenants. The repayment levels in those projects have plummeted to 36%. It's a crisis. And then the last part, Chair, we do have a problem with which the provincial MEC for human settlements in KZN is helping us with, which is the invasion of 260 units in Umsunduzi, belonging to Capital City. It's called the Aloe Ridge Project. It's a huge project. And the last phase that was under construction was invaded. And the provincial MEC has been very active over the last month, getting the support of the Umsunduzi local authority to link up the municipal services to the units that were built for the invaders, because the invasion was led by the military vets. And the reason why we got caught in the crossfire, Chairperson, because the reason why they were invaded didn't have anything to do with the project. It's because the military vets were unhappy that military vets housing had not been delivered. So the MEC is working with the Umsunduzi Council. And then the last question because the liability issue the CSM will handle, but the last issue, collaboration with City of Johannesburg, Chairperson, is very, very close, because the City of Johannesburg takes the building where the landlord is absent, because they are owing on it, they take the building, they expropriate it, and then they've been making those buildings available to bidders through what the city calls the Inner City Investors Forum, We have been addressing those forums. There have been two so far. And once those buildings are awarded to the successful bidder, those successful bidders come to the SHRA and apply for the grant. So we hope that that will bear fruit.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of the targeting administration, Chairperson, I don't know, I think we're excited to a certain extent and shot ourselves in the foot. If you look at the targets in administration, you'll find that three of the targets are actually double counted. For instance, we have an HR plan to achieve, and within an HR plan is performance appraisal. And we still go and say performance appraisal, so we just shot ourselves twice. We could have performed much more better than what we've reported. We've learned from that, and it's not going to happen any longer. Chairperson, there was another question on land availability. How is the SHRA going to ensure non-recurrence of this irregular expenditure? Before we even consider a project for accreditation, they have to prove, amongst other things, that land availability is there, either through a valid offer to purchase, or a valid list, or a valid title they did. If those three are not there, or then we don't even consider it, we decline it. And then I wanted to ask whether the list of accredited FHI should be annexed to the presentation that we've done. It is available in the annual report on pages 32 and 33. But we can still take it, amend it, and send it through. CEO, I think you need to talk about future interventions for the Bobo keeping in touch with it. So we are fine on it. Okay. And then the last one, Chairperson, is the accrual of the leave. It is indeed an accrual. What we needed, what we disagreed on, was that we disclosed it as a provision before and not as an accrual. Both are liabilities. It's just how we disclose it. They prefer accrual because there's nothing that is uncertain. We know the people who are working there, we know how many days are available, we know what their rate of pay is. So as long as nothing is uncertain is there, then it comes in accrual. Otherwise, we need to treat it as a provision.
Institution with that grant. Thank you.
initial comments. In response to the question around the land parcel on the city of Cape Town that was receiving so much media attention, I just wanted to ask for clarity on the statements regarding the fact that the department has been working with the city of Cape Town in coming towards a mutual understanding on the way forward. I'd like to understand what engagements you are referring to, sir, because the member did ask for clarity on what happened around that parcel. And actually, all that happened was that it was referred back because the disposal price initially brought to council was at 10% of the value. And by disposing of that land parcel for a higher amount, the city was able to actually ensure that there were 30% more social housing units. So there was never an unwillingness on the city of Cape Town's part that required some sort of intervention from the SHRAL, from the National Department in terms of working together to coming towards a mutual understanding. So I'd like some clarity on those remarks. Thank you.
Okay. I thought that's
not the issue. I'll deal with it.
No,
no, you want the answer, I'll give you the answer.
I'm joking, I'm joking. Fine, can we get Anna? No one is Khalil in this side, yeah.
Khalil.
Yeah. Okay, we get Danny in the microphone, okay. Come on. Come on, we get him out, come on.
The committee would be aware that the department disperses the Evans Settlement Development Grant to all the 8 metros. So, and all the 8 metros form part of MINMEC, Digital MINMEC. We have quarterly engagements with cities, all of them, collectively, and severally. The USDG provides for cities to acquire land. Now, in the case of disposal, we are equally concerned. Any city that disposes of land, we take an interest in that. In the case of the city of Cape Town, it's not just this land, by the way. There's several properties that the city is seeking to improve their, to put them to better use, for lack of a better word. So we do engage with the city, not only their portfolio, but the city requires other state-owned properties held by national government and other entities within the city. So there is an ongoing conversation between ourselves and the city. As I indicated, Chair, so for us it will be amiss to merely contest or engage on just one property that hit the headlines. We are engaging with the city on their program of spatial transformation land assembly. And therefore, where do you deploy this USDG? It's a developmental conversation, Jefferson. The city submits to us the projects wherein they want to use the USDG. So I'm just saying, I think I wanted the committee to appreciate that there is a programmatic engagement. It's not a knee-jerk or triggered by media report. No, there is a ongoing engagement with the city, even where we disagree. We have disagreements on a number of fronts, but we are in conversation. I think that's the point I wanted to make. Because when all is said and done, the developmental outcome of integrated, sustainable human settlements, we have to fuse our resources to deliver that outcome. And you can't deliver that outcome adversarially. But you have to begin conversation, working towards consensus about choices that you make. And therefore, that's really the perspective that we hold. So I wanted to assist the committee to appreciate how we're responding to those concerns. I think let me not over elaborate on that, because that's really just, I wanted to locate that conversation within a structured engagement that we have in the city. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, the section 19.1, I had made an effort to answer it, but let me first of all answer very factually. Yes, the SHRA is and was definitely conscious of or aware of regulation 19.1. They are regulations that we must administer. It's an interpretation matter. So when we put the money inside a contract, inside a project, the grant recipient has to have secure land rights. 9 times out of 10, or maybe 8 times out of 10, that's ownership. They get a title deed. When you read 19.1, what it's telling you, and which is where our emphasis was that if it's not ownership, you can still award the grant if it's on a registrable notarial lease of a minimum of 30 years. So when you read the whole clause, the focus is on that secure land rights in the form of a registrable lease of not less than 30 years. You read the whole paragraph, when we were reading it, we weren't interpreting it as being that the core is that it has to be a direct lease with a public landowner. So we were satisfied on our reading with it that, number one, the landowner is a public, is a local government. Number two, the grant recipient does have secure land rights because they have a sublease, admittedly a sublease, of 30 years. And we ticked it off. We thought we had interpreted the regulations correctly. The auditors didn't agree, purely on the basis that, no, but wait, Shah, this is not a lease, it's a sub-lease. And that's why I've admitted that, okay, if that's the interpretation of the auditors, we apologize. We were reading it the way we were reading, but we were reading it consciously. We didn't read it and then consciously ignore it. Chair, I just want to make a small point about when it comes to local authorities, when it comes especially to vibrant cities like the city of Cape Town, at the end of the day, it comes down to the local property economics. There's a very simple thing in the city of Cape Town, and that is that the getting housing in the city bowl is expensive. When opportunities to make sure that you achieve integration come our way as government, local, provincial and national, we have to seize those opportunities, otherwise we don't achieve the public policy objective of integration. So there are very few opportunities left. The one that's being referred to, which is presumably Seapoint, was one. And it had already been in discussion for quite some time about how to put the deal together. There were social housing proposals on the table. There are others that, I mean, we've gone through the whole, Salt River Market thing. And fortunately now there's a breakthrough on the Pine Road one. So we really do hope that, seeing as the mandate of this government agency is to achieve social integration, and economic integration and spatial integration, it's little wonder that the matter of losing a limited opportunity in Seapoint seems for a period to have evaporated, and that's why it's such a topical issue. But my colleagues from National hopefully will find consensus with the city.
Okay, I think we that note there, there are two I'm very out of way, but what can I call it? Saying in Khoza and legal debate. That's called somebody Subteta El Ginyan. So you are getting punishment for being honest. I must say, it's very rare to find a civil servant who's so honest. You are really honest. And that's what. The honesty sometimes is here, sometimes you come in and go anywhere. Please keep on doing that.
Yes, that's what the minister said. Don't be so honest.
We need honesty.
The minister said, don't be so honest.
Honesty.
Yeah, you are. If you say things they are, whether they are right or wrong, and we learn from them. We learn from them. Thank you very much, Graham. I'm sure we'll come to the end of the meeting.